Wait, did they? This is what I meant.
Dead down. I know a number of flights are either being diverted or delayed. My flight almost went to George this morning.
I am going to attempt to respond and actually agree with the Cuban's observation that PHP is a program that is should thrive or succeed because the owner of the house has contributed. But I think we're making the mistake of thinking that the contribution should be, you must be trained and go and build your house. One of the things which we
deeply thought through and ambitious submissions which deal with appointments and in fact the whole structure of the corporation. And now just procedurally, on what basis is it your intention to take the full submission, which in fact don't address simply the matters that are in the bill? If so, to what purpose? Because the bill has a very direct purpose, and that is to take direct executive control and install a political board. So I mean, why are we taking all of these other submissions? Are people not just wasting their time?
I might agree with what has been raised, but the issue is that when I was going through the submission, you see that these things, other people, they prefer to take a long road to reach a place, others they take a shortcut. Because when I go through some of the submissions, as much as they are missing the point, if that is correct, but some of them are trying to say, we better not do that and look at this matter on this way. And some of them are saying, as much as we say this is the way we must go, but they also comment on the actual submission. Not all of them are missing the point completely. Some they do come back to the specific clauses which have dealt with to say, this is our submission on the clauses and so on. I think in that way, it will be difficult to generally say they are missing the point, because I assume that they just decided to go to church and go to job rather than planning from the time to job.
We have called people there for public hearing, and I'm going to make the submissions. Once they finish, we will sit as a committee and make this type of comments that we're making. We are even, it's unfair for us to even say how their submissions look like and what is that should have done. I must say also, Chair, that the comments we made are a bit unfortunate to say that we are wrestling a plane center. Actually, we are not. You see, for a long time, executive has actually came with a lot of legislative proposals and actually running legislation. I think that what we are doing, we are exercising our political rights as members of parliament to make a legislative proposal that we think is to the best interest of the corporation. That's what we're doing. Thank you.
All right. I think that I'm not going to rule on this matter. People have made presentations. They have interpreted the bill in the way that they, see it. I've also read a lot of the submissions, and they raise all sorts of broader issues, perhaps medium to long-term issues. If they think it's important to air those views, that's fine. But there is a proposed bill on the table. And we were also going to appeal to talk to them specifically also. What's on the table? And that's really what this hearing is about. But if they want to use the opportunity to air a wider range of views about the corporation, etc., I'm not going to stifle that, but I think at some point if they go on and on about the broad issues, I'm going to have to then narrow it down as a chairperson and perhaps ask them to confine themselves to the matters before us. And that's the difficulty I also had with a number of issues. But we can't dictate to people what they should submit to us. They have done that, and we've given them a platform to express their views. On the issue that Mr. Kumalo has raised, I didn't mean that we in a negative sense that we are left in play, but it is an unusual situation for this committee. This is the first time the committee is tabling a bill. So it was in its right to do that. But I think we also want to give an assurance to the people who've come from the various organizations that we are not closed to what they might put before us. We are willing to listen very carefully to what they say. And if there are important suggestions, we might well incorporate them in the final product. All right, I see Professor Berger has just come in. Is he here?
Yeah.
I saw him walking. You need 5 minutes to get your breath, sir?
No, I'm fine.
Are you okay? All right. In terms of the program, let me just then quickly take members through this. If Professor Berger is ready, we can start off with him because we've got him as the first presenter. For all the presenters, you have a half an hour slot. We would advise that you speak for up to 10 minutes so that we can at least question and have a discussion with you thereafter. If you choose to speak for 30 minutes, then I think we're going to have very little time to engage and to have a conversation with you. So, as a general rule, let's keep it to between 7 and 10 minutes for presentation, and then questions and comments from members, and we can have a conversation. So, Professor Berger, we'll start off with you now. It's just 3 past 10, so we'll give you a first slot. Thereafter, to the SANEP, though I know that your chairperson is not here, hopefully he'll be here in a few minutes' time, so then we can stick to the program. And then thereafter, it's Save Our SABC Coalition. Is this the correct name? Save Our SABC Coalition. Mr. Skinner is here. Followed by Media Monitoring Project, Freedom of Expression Institute. Can I just check with you? You suggested that you would want all three presentations, one after the other, and then 45 minutes or so for discussion. Is that what you still want? The three organizations want to present one after the other. And the IPO. So you are suggesting that you take the 4 presentations and then have a general discussion. Will that be in order? They are suggesting 4 presentations in a row and then we have a discussion with them as a whole. Mr. Sidole, I've seen you somewhere. We might have to shift you slightly after lunch. I hope you haven't got an earlier flight, depending on how this goes, because we're starting a bit late and will that be in order? So you'll come in immediately after lunch and then you'll be the FW, the Clerk Foundation, Center for Constitutional Rights, thereafter the SABC Board, and is the SACP here, South African Communist Party? No, all right, they might come in a bit later. Otherwise, I think we've put all the presenters here before us, am I right? Good. Then, Professor Berger, welcome to you. We're going to hand over to you. Take us through your presentation, 7 to 10 minutes, and then we'll have a discussion with you.
Good morning to the chair and to the committee and honourable members. Thank you for inviting me to follow up with my written presentation. Let me jump straight in. As a summary to the presentation, I argue that changing the power of the National Assembly to get SABC board members dismissed will not solve the problem that it seeks to address. I recommend that the National Assembly should really use its power to develop a longer-term vision with more wide-ranging reforms, and I suggested 5 reforms in that regard, which I would like to speak to in brief. The first is staggering the term length of the board. The second is spreading the power of the board to include non-political stakeholders and also more clearly accommodating the interests of the executive and the legislative. The third is unbundling the top position in the corporation. The fourth is expanding on the accountability mechanisms of the corporation. And the fifth is unbundling the concentration of power in a single broadcast entity. As background to this presentation, I argue that the crisis over who controls SABC has reached a deadlock because of the over-politicization of the public broadcaster, which is now caught between Parliament, the Presidency, the Ministers, the Board, the CEO, the senior staff, and the Head of News. In fact, the only external stakeholder body that doesn't seem to be involved and probably should be involved is ICASA. I think even with an increase in the power of the National Assembly over the dismissal question, contestation will continue, such as between the executive and the legislature, for as long as SABC remains an attractive and an easy target for capture. I think what needs changing is the structural possibility for any single external force to exercise exclusive influence over a centralized lever of power. Of course, the current deadlock is not separate from the individuals and the political forces around it, but it's also an indication of an unforeseen design flaw that has not been able to accommodate such individual and political issues. So taking a longer term view, SABC needs to be structurally depoliticized as far as possible. A change to parliamentary power over dismissals of the board without any other changes will not end the recent instability. For example, the presidency could still drag its feet in implementing parliamentary decisions, or it could choose to appoint an interim body that fails to satisfy parliamentary preferences. My point is that as long as SABC governance is one of external contestation, rather than having the different interests represented structurally within the governance itself, political deadlock will prevail. And that scenario would be one where different political forces try and frustrate one another to the detriment of cooperation in the interest of long-term credibility and poor public service. The players would continue to try and assert their particular interests from the outside, whereas if all of them were accommodated within the board, along with other stakeholders, they would need to compromise, they would need to look to the wider and shared interests of all of them, and therefore to the public interest. So I think anything less than a fundamental overhaul of the governance of SABC would be a wasted opportunity now, and a mistaken step, because I don't think a single change will solve this over-politicization problem. So moving to my five suggestions. The first is staggering the term lengths of the board in the way that ICASA is. I think this would institutionalize better stability in governance and would remove the possibility of a clean sweep of replacing the board for political reasons. And that would reduce the incentive of any dominant political force at a given juncture to seek political value through controlling the board. My second proposal is to share the power with non-political stakeholders. I think that this would involve diverse interests within the board. I would mention in this regard that by spreading the power of the board, we would be taking a leaf out of many other countries. In Germany, they have 12 public broadcasters, not just one, but each public broadcaster has on average 32% of its board members composed of state and party people, 25% trade and industry, 20% NGOs, 9% churches, and the others are miscellaneous civil society. If you look at many countries, Albania, Bosnia, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Lithuania, Slovenia, NGOs and unions are also represented in the public broadcaster board. And a portion of board members include elected representatives of the broadcaster itself, which I think is very important. And that's in countries like France, Macedonia, Romania and Slovenia. And then in a place like Hungary, while political nominees make up a third of the two public broadcaster boards they have there, only half of that quota comes from the ruling party, so there's an artificial stacking to include opposition representation. My suggestion in brief here is that I think to have all the different interests as insiders rather than as hostile outsiders with the winner-takes-all approach would be to accommodate executive interests by having a board that includes one nominee from the presidency, one nominee from the minister. To accommodate the legislative interests, I think you could have four from the National Assembly, from the ruling party, three from the opposition parties. The House of Provinces, I think, could appoint one. And then the rest, I'd suggest civil society, churches, university vice chancellors, PANCELS, SABC staff, business community could all have one. That would be six representing official political-based nominees and six coming from civil society. I would add here that the nominations from these different sectors is one thing to look at. The eligibility to be nominated is another thing. And I would say we should take a leaf out of the Lithuanian experience here, where although states and parliament actually include nominations in the Lithuanian board, the nominees may not be members of the state or members of parliament or political officials. So my proposal is that by sharing power with non-political stakeholders, there should be a role for the political process to be involved. In my suggestion here, there are 10 versus 6, 10 people coming from presidency, ministry, House of Provinces, and Parliament. But I'm arguing also that those 10 should not be members of political office. Well, I think that would certainly represent all the interests within the SABC board and institutionalize any differences within there rather than the unseemly conflict we have at the moment. My next proposal is unbundling the top position in the corporation. I think it's very important that we separate the editor-in-chief and the business side of the corporation. This would make the job much more manageable. You'd have two positions reporting to the board, and it would actually protect the editor-in-chief from being targeted for removal for any political reasons on the pretext that his or her financial performance was poor. I think that would strengthen the leadership of the SABC if we separate those two jobs. And a further consideration I would recommend about that is that the system whereby the minister, as representative of the shareholder, appoints the CEO, the COO, and the CFO, this should be changed because this gives the executive, in my view, too much power, whereas the SABC board should report to Parliament and to ICATA. My next proposal is that SABC really needs to be required to set up much more directly public accountable mechanisms, such as advisory boards, annual izimbizo around the provinces. And then my last proposal, which is very radical, but I think it's very serious, is that SABC, as a huge apparatus, does focus the interest and intensity of many stakeholders who would like to have control. It's also very cumbersome being so big, and as such, I think it can miss important opportunities on both the business and the content side. For example, the two new regional TV stations in African languages have yet to see the light of day, and I think the digital side of SABC, the website, is lagging severely in its potential. So I think we could look particularly at the German model and unbundle SABC to separately governed bodies. I would suggest here that there was an SABC National with its own board, consisting of SAFM, Metro, RSG, TV 1, 2, and 3, and their website. Then I would suggest another 9 set of boards, which would relate to the provincially oriented stations. They could be networked in certain ways, particularly as regards TV 4 and 5. And thirdly, I'd suggest another board for SABC International, which would be the TV and the web of SABC International, and to the extent that SABC is broadcasting Radio International as well. So that would give you one board for SABC National, one for SABC International, 7 for each provincially linked broadcast, and 2 more boards to manage the separate stations. So instead of one single super board, power would be distributed across the 11 boards, each board representing diverse stakeholders, as I've suggested earlier, to include representatives from other sectors, not just through the parliamentary and political institutions. Well, in conclusion, I think as soon as SABC becomes vulnerable to being a tool for political purposes, you can get a destructive conflict that gets set in. And yet the mission of a public broadcaster is surely greater than any short-term political interests. I think that the current MPs in the ruling party here may think that if their influence was greater on the dismissal side, there would not be problems with SABC. But I think that if political stands shift as they will, many current MPs could find that they would then be excluded from any influence regarding SABC. So I think each political tendency has to take into account the bigger picture, recognize it's not in their narrow interest for any single one of them that the public broadcaster could fall under sway of a single hegemonic grouping, because tomorrow that self-same group could find itself ousted by another group. The point is it should be made impossible for SABC structurally to become the instrument of any single grouping. To just recap briefly, I proposed a radical unbundling where we don't have power in Auckland Park or in one board but spread across national and provincial centres. That reduces the possibility and the political cost effectiveness for any single force to control public broadcasting. I've also suggested the post of CEO and editor-in-chief should be separated, and I think that should apply to all the broadcast institutions of an unbundled SABC. In addition, I propose that the board should be more directly accountable to civil society and the public through various mechanisms, advisory boards and izimbizo. And I suggest that different stakeholders should be represented on the boards and the terms of office of the board should be staggered. I think that's a coherent package. The current gridlock provokes the priority and provides a window of opportunity to radically overhaul the SABC's governance. If we miss that opportunity, it will not easily come again. I think a piecemeal response of making a single change will be ineffective. And I think instead Parliament should take leadership in overseeing a thoroughgoing reform and do so ahead of the coming elections. This would be an excellent legacy bestowed on South Africa by the MPs who complete their current term in office. I think if we go ahead with that amendment as it is, it will, and it's passed, it will require an investigation into the current board, which will take time. The current board is likely to challenge that investigation, which will take time. The dismissal will take time. The appointment of an interim body will take time, and finally a new board will take time. So my suggestion is rather let things stand as they are and go for a full-on restructuring that will leapfrog any interim arrangements. Let us go for a whole new setup now. So my suggestion is the current impetus could really be used to create a correction in a design flaw in SABC that nobody foresaw in the beginning, but which the current crisis has brought to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Berger. I was pleased that you were listed first to speak, because it's important in doing exercises like these to start off with asking what is the mischief we're trying to fix, and that's exactly the point where you start. That's what one ought to do when you legislate or amend. I want to ask you whether what you've proposed isn't wildly, with respect, unrealistic. The normal mischief we know is that party leaders of the ruling party, and I mean look to the House, not the Union Building, give direct orders to ruling party MPs as to who should be inserted or added to Parliament. Choice for the board, and then the problem is, of course, that those MPs acquiesce. They agree. They actually do insert those names, and therefore there is no legal recourse. But that is the normal problem, and is it not the case that the present problem is an assault on our independent institutions, starting with the Constitutional Court, and that what we are dealing with here is simply the first move in providing for direct political appointments. What has been purported to be the problem until now, i.e. an intervention by the executive to insert three people, is now replaced by a provision which provides for the president, for which you can read whatever you wish, directly to appoint without any fuss, interference, qualification, or influence from any sector of society, the four members of the board, which must sit with Mr. Dalyimpofu and a few of the colleagues over there. That is the proposal, and therefore is it not unrealistic to argue models like the Western European corporatist model? I would say surely that would read what was it. And the fact is, you will know and you will agree, that what we have as the appointment mechanism for the SABC is something grander than a public broadcaster would usually enjoy. We drew that appointment mechanism directly from the Chapter 9. And the first half of the proposal in this bill is simply to make the removal provision also consonant with Chapter 9. It would therefore give Parliament a role in that removal. And that proposal, I regret to say, came from me. I made it in mistaken sympathy with my colleagues here when they were in a state of terror about as a result of pressure from sources, which are no mystery. However, the second half of this bill is the one that is the direct attack on independent institutions. Are you therefore, do you not think that that is your proposal is unrealistic?
We'll discuss your suggestions later. What's the question?
No, I'm not making a suggestion. A, is it not unrealistic? B, should we not go for try to retain what we've got, and that therefore a Chapter 9 style removal provision is acceptable? But then, surely the last part of this bill is utterly unacceptable, the one that tries to cure the purported problem precisely because it, by putting the power into the hands of the executive that has always been alleged to be the problem.
Professor, you're taking down the question.
Thank you, sir. Sir, the whole question of TV licenses are quite controversial in South Africa, in the sense that the public is forced in a sense by law to pay a license. Now, they see it as buying a service, and being buying a service, they want to have some way of maybe helping to elect a board or have some say in whatever. I think the government see it as a tax, maybe, I'm not sure, but you know, you're even forced to buy them with a license, whether you're watching SABC or not, but the money still goes there. My question is, are there any examples in the world, more or less, of this sort of model where maybe the TV license holders also got some say, because I think the closest we got was, oh yeah, Parliament having some say in the board, and I'm not sure if there's more direct ways of arguing this, any models in the world then.
Peter, sir?
Jefferson, thanks. Any reference to the ANC?
from any other party but the ANC must be seen as gossip and rumor mongering. I mean, nobody can speak on behalf of the ANC, particularly the opposition party. I was hoping that Smut would speak on behalf of the DA, but Nancy comments about the ANC. But that is rumor mongering. That must be put on record, sir. Professor Berger, your proposal about civil society, if you look at your proposal, it seems that they are underrepresented. I mean, I've tried to look at out of the six, and it seems it's about maximum six. Now, and what you said in your introduction, it seems your proposal and talks opposite that. Maybe you should just say more light on that. In terms of that, the comment about the time to our disposal, some of the challenges that we are confronted with is nothing to do with, you can't link it automatically with my term in office. It's some of the challenges that needs to be confronted and being addressed. So, hence one can't say that if you don't fix it now, time will run out. There will be a parliament after I leave office or come to the end of our term. Chairperson, then the second or the last question is about the proposal of, I'm not to say, a federalist approach that you give you deregulate it to provinces. Will we see a federalist kind of approach and end in itself in conflict? Your challenge or your comment about some of the problems that SABC in Auckland Park shouldn't be fixed there instead of delegating that further down to provinces, that you might lose control further on that.
Well, in response to the first question, I don't think my proposal is wildly unrealistic because I think it's really in the interest of every political elected person here to draw a lesson from this and to say, actually, we need to spread the power so that, you know, to the extent that the SABC board was dominated by one particular tendency, that can never happen again, no matter what their tendency is. I think that's in everybody's short, medium, and long-term interest. So I don't think it's wildly unrealistic. I think it's important that the legislature has that role to play, which is different to the executive and different to the role of the parties. In relation to the second question, the licensing models, I think there are indeed many models around the world that one can look at about funding. I think that the value of the license fee is that it does actually give the public a direct stake in the public broadcaster rather than an indirect stake, and I think that's something that we should not throw away. In relation to the last question, the question was my proposal that the board includes nominations and presumably then dismissals by different sectors of society, not only the political institutions. Is the civil society underrepresented? Because I was saying there's six, and then there are six from the civil society groups and 10 representing state groups. Well, I would say that, first of all, I believe that the political institutions, as representative institutions, certainly have some, you know, they represent public interest to some extent, but they also represent very specific interests as well, as I think we've seen recently. So that's why it's important to have these other groups that will come with a different perspective. But I'm also arguing that, and just to repeat that if the presidency were to nominate one person, the minister were to nominate one person, and so on and so forth, those individuals should also not be members of the state. So they would come from that sector, but they would not be a member of that sector in that sense. So the presidency would not nominate somebody who would be an official in the presidency. I share the views of others who say that to be a member of the board, you have to be a non-political party office bearer. You can't be an MP and you can't be a state employee. So even though you know, the nominations would come from those sectors, they wouldn't be directly employees of those sectors. And then I think when all these sectors are in the board together, they need to also look to the bigger interests, the corporate interests, the fiduciary interests of the institution. They can't just bring their own parts of their interests. So even the Labour representative could not only be batting for Labour, they have to think about, well, how does business get accommodated in SABC and so on. So I think that there is a role for Parliament to have nominees in the board, And I think there is a role, through whatever place they want, there is a role for the presidency, there is a role for the minister, there is a role for the national house of provinces. But what I'm saying is I don't think those must be employees, because then I think you lose the public significance of the board. The issue, if we don't fix it now, time won't run out. I do think that there's an opportunity now, because I think we're fresh from a period where people would like to see a more independent setup. And I think that if we look ahead to a year or two and politics have settled down and stabilized a bit, there might be less interest in restructuring SABC by the particular dominant group at that point in time. But now, as we know, dominant groups do change, so we need to think in the longer term. If you look at how SABC was agreed in the first instance, it was because, in my view, the National Party did not want the ANC to control the SABC. The National Party didn't want the ANC to control the SABC after the elections, and the ANC didn't want the National Party to control the SABC during the elections. So there was a mutual interest saying, well, let's make it independent of both parties. And so I think that we have a similar situation now, where we've got a good balance of forces that we can say, let's improve the independence of the SABC. The federalist approach, could one lose control? I think it would actually lead to a much more accountable SABC. For example, if Umhlobo Weneni, for example, was part of an Eastern Cape provincially based board with representatives from the provincial legislature, the provincial unions, provincial civil society, provincial universities, provincial churches, and so on, I think that would make for much more accountability than we have at the moment with one super board which is removed. By the way, I should say that I'm not saying the entire SABC should be unbundled on a federalist basis, because we still have national stations. But we also have stations that, in particular, do have a regional service, and we do have two TV stations that are supposed to be regional as well coming up. So I'm combining the federalist with the national perspective, and saying we can have different boards for the two different kinds of animals. Come on.
Thank you, Professor Berger. In the page 2 of your presentation, sharing power, non-political takeover. In a country that has seen 50 years of racism, sexism, and all forms of discrimination, what could be considered to be a non-political stakeholder? And I want to say, Professor Peck, if you go down to your proposal, if you check the presidential appointment, that president must be from a political party, if possible. The other one, ministerial appointment, the minister might come from the ANC, and the ANC has been so good that it's got ministers who are not necessarily ANC. Musibidi Mangena from Azapo, the deputy minister of public works, and all sorts of things. You've got even a chief whip of the former DL chief whip, who's an ambassador in some country representing the country. You know, the ANC does all these things, you know. It might be political, it might not be political for you, but I'm just saying, if you go down the trade union, in terms of the institutions, the trade union, Solidarity Trade Union, very close to the DA. COSATU is in an alliance of the ruling party and the communist party. FEDUSA is one of those unions that are also aligned to particular in the churches themselves, the SACC, this and that and that. What would you consider to be non-political, you know, stakeholder in terms of your understanding? And if you go to the conclusion, Mr. Chair, I'll just quote here, paragraph number 2. It says, sentence number 5, in conclusion, in page 4. Current MPs from the ruling party, meaning us, in parliament may believe that if their influence was greater, there would not be problems with the SABC governance. On the contrary, if and when political sense shifts, many current MPs could then find themselves excluded from any influence regarding the SABC. I would want to understand, what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean? And thirdly, I thought the federalism you are talking about must not border very close to the old Bantustan system of saying that Radio Lesedi, because most of the suits are concluded in Free State, let the provincial board there, you know, some Radio Bantu type of thing, and then call the FM in KwaZulu-Natal. You know, we are living in a cosmopolitan country. You find that in Cape Town, you've got more people from Limpopo you know, here from Venda, from whatever, everywhere. I'm telling you, there could be. No, that's fine. You can say that. No, you can say that. Now, when you've got people from Limpopo, it would be unfortunate that they can't even listen to a radio station from the province where they come from, because they must not listen to Mthombeni, because they're in Cape Town. And Cape Town happens to be majority of closer speaking people, that we must have to have a board like that. I mean, that's not what we want. That's not what we're preaching in Parliament. That's what we say. The current SABC format, even in terms of its programming, continue to be dominated by English and speaking radio stations, and a majority of them are even national. We can go to Radio 2000, SAFM, whatever, stuff like that, but it's not like that with other programs. So therefore, we that's hoping that you can give us a better way of how we can federalize and still keep the national interest, you know, of the country. But lastly, I thought that I would hear you commenting on the actual matter on the table, the issue that relates to section, to Act number 4, Broadcasting Act of 1999, section 15, A and B, a removal of a member of members, the last point, a dissolution of the board by the National Assembly or by the President. I thought I would like to just get your view around the actual matter. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Professor, on the issue of removal of members, I appointment and leaving for the moment the issue of the removal procedures, have you looked back at the decision made at CEDESA and the procedure used then to appoint the first post-apartheid SABC board? And have you looked, you know, particularly the mechanisms used then to use it independent and wise and persons who had the necessary skills to understand how the SABC works and what was required. Have you looked back at that? Do you consider that an option to perhaps consider seriously again?
Good one. Two questions, Professor. The first one is on page 2. I just want to make me understand. If you are saying if those people be appointed by the different stakeholders as indicated, and in terms of removal and so on, they must be removed by those who have appointed them. How do they account, and where do they account exactly? Are they accounting where they've been appointed, or they'll be accounting central, like a board here in Parliament? Now, in terms of removal, you must go back there to be removed by whoever appointed you. How does it work? I just don't understand the logic around that particular matter. If you can just clarify that, how does it work? So, something happened somewhere with pencil, I suppose they remove a person, now it was a board without a person. It sounds like clumsy, but maybe it was a better way of explaining it, if you can try to do that, to assist on this matter. The second issue is what we have said, if I'm not misquoting what we have said, that the current crisis at the SABC and so on and so on. Now, I hear your last statement. You said you advocate that the current status quo must remain in terms of the current legislation. That's what you said. So we must take the broader view of reviewing everything, which I think that process needs to be a very inclusive and involving process, as you put it and so on. Why, you see, if you say it has retained the status quo, why no one has acted in the current crisis as they did? Why? Because we've got this legislation, as we are saying, we must maintain it, but no one can act as we are talking on what you term a crisis of the SABC. But you say you must retain it. At whose interest to retain a legislation where no one can act if there is a problem? If you can just respond on that one, then.
Okay, this is the last round. You finished? Okay. Thanks for the question. On the first question, I'm not saying that anybody is apolitical in this thing, but I'm saying the institutions involved. There are some political institutions such as Parliament, the Presidency, the Ministry, and my argument really is that those should not be the only institutions involved in and the representatives on the board should not only reflect the choices of those institutions. Hence, I suggest these other institutions. Those people may or may not be political in one way or the other, but they will also, I'm quite sure, bring certain interests to bear. That the trade union person proposes to consult a representative for 2 years and a representative of another trade union for another 2 years, however they agree. That person, they may bring politics to bear, but they also bring certain other interests to bear. Just as even in the, you know, the presidency brings different considerations to bear than do MPs here, than does the minister. Although, that, you know, if you're talking about ANC people all in the same party, I think it makes a difference about where people come from. So that's my response there. I'm not suggesting that somehow the thing gets depoliticized. I'm just saying let's bring all these interests in, because I think that the executive has an interest, you know, legitimate interest. The parliament has a legitimate interest. The minister has a legitimate interest. But I also think these other groups have legitimate interest, and therefore that's why I'm saying we should consider representatives from those sectors. And then they have to sort out their own politics within there. And I believe that it's better to have people in the same tent, you know, fighting within the same tent, because they have to keep the tent from collapsing, than to have them outside, which is the case that we have at the moment. In terms of the federalism question, and it being akin to the Bantustan thing, you know, we do have a problem at the moment that I'm sure the Honourable Member would concede that sometimes national news in this country is actually Johannesburg news. So, you know, you have the opposite danger there, I think, of instead of balkanization, you have, you know, just big city domination. I don't think that having a broadcaster, provincial broadcasters, means that, one, they don't broadcast nationally, but I think it means putting the center of gravity in the region where most of the people are. Not all, of course. I mean, there's Zulu speakers in KZ, you know, in Gauteng, of course. But, you know, if the most Zulu speakers are in KZN, it makes sense to have a board that is based in KZN, which includes representatives from the KZN legislature, the KZN university, KZN churches, and so on and so forth. I think if we look at the German example, it's not a case that, you know, the different, what they call Länder, the different states in Germany, it's not a case that those broadcasters don't see themselves as German broadcasters. But they do bring to bear the particular interests, such as, you know, Bavarian interests or, you know, northern interests, depending on where they are. So I don't think we have to worry about, in this integrated country, about going back to a Bantustan view. I recognize the concern, but let's also not keep this over-centralized broadcaster, which is all, you know, where Johannesburg is now taken to be the national, and where, in fact, if you are in the regions, you don't always experience the broadcaster as reflecting your region. So that, once again, I think that having some of the regionally appropriate or primarily appropriate broadcasters having regional boards, I think that is a good way to go. And ultimately what it does is, as I said earlier, it makes it much more difficult for any single political force, because there's not one site that you have to control. You've now got to try and go for 9 provincial broadcasters. Well, that's not easy to do. And I think that's a good thing, because it enables the different regional politics to come to the fore. On the removal question, I am worried about the bill at the moment, as I said, because I think it won't actually achieve what it wants to achieve, because I think the current deadlock, where neither the minister nor the president will dismiss the board, although this committee would like to see the board dismissed. That's my interpretation. But even suppose it goes ahead in its present form, as I said, there's nothing to stop the president from delaying signing that amendment into law. There's also nothing to stop the president in this existing thing from appointing the new four-person people just according to how he sees fit. So that's not going to resolve the dissatisfaction of this existing committee. So it does seem to me that really one needs to then expand this thing, and not only expand to say, well, these are the conditions and these are the term lengths of an interim board, but to say, well, let's also actually say we want a new SABC with a completely different governance structure. And in that regard, I would really argue that, and this is, I'm responding here to partially some of the other questions, that to go through this route of making one amendment now and leaving some power with the presidency as an external agency to this whole thing, and then dismissing the board, well, having the investigation, if that's been contested, because as one can see from this board no doubt will not go easily. And so you're going to have a long drawn out process of yet more paralysis, I think. So that's why I think it's really better for this thing to go straight into a longer term process, which I think Parliament can seize the initiative. The Minister, in fact, wanted to suggest a bigger review as well. And I see no reason why, on this particular issue, the Minister and the Parliamentary Committee can't see eye to eye. And you say nobody can act at the moment. Well, Parliament can act. Parliament can initiate a process to actually set up a much broader review of SABC's governance. You have the power to do that. The cadetship procedures, I think those are specific to the first post-apartheid board, when there was, you know, the independent wise people. There was no legitimate parliament in those days, therefore it made sense to have that cadetship board. I think also we must acknowledge, and I differ from some other stakeholders here, I think we must acknowledge that elected MPs have a stake in saying what should happen with SABC. My only concern is they should not be the only people. There should also be the presidency, and there should also be the executive, the minister, and there should also be the civil society bodies that have a stake in this. On the question of whether the civil society people account to, at the moment, SABC already accounts to the minister in many things. It accounts to CASA in some things. It accounts to Parliament in some things. There's not so much a problem with that, although I think it could be clarified as to what kinds of accountability are required in each sector there. So I think a civil society representative, say nominated by trade unions or by university vice chancellors or whatever, those people would have to account, of course, to the constituency that nominates them, and one would set a term for their appointment, and there would be terms under which they would have to be, under which they could be recalled. They couldn't be recalled at whim, just as we don't want any recall to be at whim. But they would also appoint account to Parliament as a whole. They would account to their appointing body as individuals and to what extent they've been able to bring, for example, Labour concerns into there. But Parliament is a different story. Parliament is looking at SABC as a whole. Parliament may decide that, you know, these people are out of order, but that's not then Parliament's prerogative to get rid of them. That is dependent on those organisations that appoint them, or the coalitions that would have to come together to appoint those representatives. I hope I've addressed the question.
I'm looking at time now.
Chairperson, seems that the Prof knows the President pretty well in terms of him being delaying. Is the Prof suggesting that we should remove the President from removing the board, that should straight be in the hands of Parliament to remove the board?
No, I'm in a nutshell, I'm suggesting that the power of SABC appointments and dismissals get spread much more widely than it is. It's not just a tussle between this house and the president.
You don't have to respond to every question. Thank you very much, Professor Berger. Can we get on to the next presentation? It's Sanet, Taranto, and Fellow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the honorable members of the committee. Sanet thanks the chairperson and the committee for providing us with an opportunity to first make a written submission and then to top it up with the oral submission today. SANAF is a voluntary organization, forum of editors, senior journalists, and journalism trainers from all areas of the media industry in our country. Our primary aim is to promote the quality and ethics of journalism, to reflect the diversity of South Africa, and to champion the freedom of expression. SANAF has been in existence for more than 10 years and has frequently made presentations to various bodies, including relevant portfolio committees in the National Assembly on issues affecting media freedom. In upholding and maintaining the freedom of expression and media freedom, SANAF is guided by the principle which has frequently been stressed without qualification by judges in our own courts and in courts in other democracies, that those freedoms are vital core values of democratic governance. A country that does not abide by them cannot claim to be a democracy. It is our view, Chairperson, for the reason that we have presented and we will elaborate further on today, that the bill before this committee should not be proceeded with because it will have undesirable and unintended consequences, which in our view goes against the principles of public service broadcasting. We believe in a different approach, one we believe should be adopted whereby stakeholders gather and devise a method through which a civil society gets to elect members of the SABC board. We believe that the problems that have beset the SABC board and the SABC itself as a direct result of political influence and political interference. Our view is that if the body is appointed by a civil society and is accountable to the public at large, not only to parliament, political influence and interference can be reduced if not eliminated. We quote in our submission several authorities, including some from our own continent, who clearly state that a public service broadcaster must be independent of political influence, and that means not only the political parties, but also of parliament. Chairperson, we call also in our submission broadcasting voice and accountability, an authoritative book published by the World Bank, which states, and I quote, "It is generally accepted that the public service broadcasting has a particular role to play in meeting public interest objectives and contributing to media pluralism, and that where broadcasting services are in public ownership, they should be editorially independent of the state and of the government of the day and managed in the public interest and accountable to the public they serve. Sanef believes that we should lean in the direction of the sentiment of senior UNESCO official Wijayananda Jayawira, who stated, and I quote, "Public service broadcasters must be directly accountable to the public." Our written submission explains in more detail the membership of the governing body. We note the proposal from the Communication Minister Ivan Masipa Kasaburi that there should be a total review of the board selection processes. She also stated that members of parliament should possibly be prevented from having any direct role in board appointments. We believe that proposal is taken forward should include exclusion of officials from the Department of Communication. We believe that board members are crucial to the success of the SABC, and that it is clear that the current system fails the test of avoiding political interference and influence, and that the fact that the SABC is in crisis at the moment because its board members and that its board members have problems is an indication that the current system has failed in assembling what we all could consider to be an acceptable board, and we therefore believe that the system should be scrapped. Chairperson, Mr. Raymond Law, who is the immediate past chairperson of our Media and Film Committee, is going to deal with some of the substantive issues raised in our submission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before I start, you have in front of you our submission, and there are two mistakes that I'd like to correct. In item 26, we say, in addition to the important submission in clause 19, that should be clause 23. And then in item 33, we refer to items 25 and or 26. It should be items 31 and or 35. Sorry, 31 or 32. Let's make the same mistake all over again.
In our written submission, we have referred to broadcasting authorities which are insistent that a public service broadcaster must be independent, especially of political influence or interference, and it is clear that the political process involved in the selection of the current board had a great deal to do with its failure. We have outlined how this came about after the Campaign for Independent Broadcasting had proposed a civil society approach to this onerous task, and that was in 1993. Though the process was accepted by the senior African National Congress official, who the CIB was dealing with during that campaign, and since former President Nelson Mandela was at the forefront of the ANC negotiations with the government of the day, he was well aware of the system proposed and the ANC's approval of it. It was changed first by President F.W. de Klerk and later, after the ANC assumed power, by Parliament. We believe very strongly that there should be a de novo approach process starting from the recommendations of the CIB, where the focus will be on the involvement of civil society. We suggested that consideration should be given to devising a Chapter 9 approach by setting up a body similar to Britain's Office of the Commissioner of Public Appointments to ensure that appointments to the board are independent of political influence. But we wish to take that argument further and suggest that the SABC be dealt with along the lines of Chapter 9 institutions after the selection of the board, which should be conducted by civil society. Chapter 9 institutions are selected by the National Assembly and appointed by the President, and of course this is in the this is the process for the SABC board, which has been found wanting. We are suggesting that after the board has been selected, the principles applying to the conduct of Chapter 9 institutions should be applied to the board, in addition to its other responsibilities as outlined in the Broadcasting Act. The principle underlying the Chapter 9 institutions is that they strengthen constitutional democracy in the Republic. Their roles are described as independent and subject only to the Constitution and the law. They must be impartial and must exercise their powers and perform their functions without fear, favor, or prejudice. Other organs of state, through legislative and other measures, must assist and protect these institutions to ensure the independence, impartiality, dignity, and effectiveness of these institutions. No person or organ of state may interfere with the functioning of these institutions. We say that if the board had these principles applied to it, it would become a powerful, independent institution. Chapter 9 institutions report to Parliament, but we believe we don't take on board the totality of the Chapter 9 institutional program. Of course, they have to report to Parliament, but we believe that though Parliament should have sight of the annual report, it should not be the main body extracting accountability from the board, because that would introduce a political process with the danger that influence could be exerted on the board. We suggest a system whereby the annual report is presented to a public meeting or meetings in the provinces, with a copy being sent to Parliament to enable parliamentarians to voice their views on the conduct of the SABC. This may seem strange that a parliament should surrender what MPs may consider their responsibility, but the role of public service broadcaster, requires that independence is real independence and not a semblance of it. It is highly important that the board must be seen to be independent of political influence. It is no mere coincidence that the authorities that we have quoted on the issue of broadcasting should be so insistent on real independence. It is because they have seen what has happened where the state broadcaster does not enjoy proper independence. Africa has many examples. I won't go any further except to draw your attention again to the authorities that we quoted, which were a World Bank book called Broadcasting, Voice and Accountability, which quoted the views of four or five senior broadcasting specialists throughout the world, and included Mr. Lumko Ntembe, who is sitting with us today as one of the informants. And then there was also public broadcasting, why, how, and of course there were the African Union's Commission on Human and People's Rights, and of course there was that famous quote from the Declaration of Principles on Freedom of Expression in Africa, adopted by the African Union's Commission on Human and People's Rights, and the Supreme Court of Ghana's view as well, all of which outline the absolute necessity for independence from political influence. And so we draw your attention to those references. On the question of the actual legislation proposed, we have outlined that in our presentation as being highly undesirable because it's going to give a power to Parliament and to the President which will enable them to exert political influence over the board, and that is totally unacceptable. I think, Mr. Chairman, what has emerged even in this short period that we've been talking this morning is a very clear indication. This arises both from the presentation and from the questions that are being asked, that there is a great deal of questioning around the manner in which the SAPC should be conducted, and the board should be elected, and the processes of such a broadcaster that require the need for a proper reassessment of the whole process and of the Broadcasting Act, particularly in trying to achieve the maximum amount of independence for this very important institution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. Question?
And I put one each to Mr. Lowe and to Mr. Lowe's house, okay, so to Mr. Lowe, just a short one, but it is an address is an assumption that many people take, and I think therefore worth doing. You suggest that MPs are a problem because they belong in the political domain, and you make, amongst others, the proposal that the SABC should take its annual report to civil society. But you know, you can't get away from the fact, surely, and that's the question. MPs are elected. That is why we are in a position. You can't say civil society must select the board except under Guy's corporatist model. I accept there's a model under which. But at the end of the day, it is elected people must take the decision. And at the end of the day, it is the president who has executive powers. We can't appoint anybody. We can't ultimately remove anybody. But where a body is independent, we can and should play a role in selecting them and in taking a view on possible removal on strict grounds like misconduct. That's the question to Mr. Lowe. You can't get away from the fact that you need elected people. That is the basis of democracy. To Mr. Ramtau, I welcome, obviously, Sanef's remarks about the dangers of what I consider a draconian and utterly unacceptable second half of this bill, and there's no way we will accept this or leave it there. I accept the fact that you say, for example, I think in a very mild fashion, that the danger of this mass sacking of the board is that board members who have acted properly and are guilty of no misdemeanor might then be sacked. But my question to you is there any single board member who has done anything wrong? Because you'd better tell me, because I am not aware of such a thing. Isn't the purpose of this clause quite simply a purge? It's a purge for political purposes, and that is why it is so dangerous and unconstitutional and unconsonant with everything we have done in this country for 14, 15 years. And if so, if this is simply a purge, it's a mechanism for a purge, then why do you say that the board is in crisis? You see, a lot of people say, oh, the board is in crisis. But why do you say that? And I need to ask you, it's appropriate to ask that of Sanef, because I regret to say that the print media have always historically treated the SABC as a kind of a soap opera. I think that the reportage is often problematic. Professor Guy Berger has written instructively on the creation of factoids around the subject of the booing of the deputy president. An entirely erroneous version of what the findings were has entered the stream, and reporters simply replicate the factoids. The same thing happened with the findings on the blacklisting report. What is the mainstream factoid is not in fact what Sisulu and Marcus said. We take great care in this committee not to go by regret what the print media says on the SABC. We go by the facts. And you see, it's my concern, and this is the question, has the print media, and I don't want to generalize because there are exceptions, has it not been guilty of introducing the idea? I'll give you just one example. That the president of this country may sack the board. The next step in the argument was he ought to sack this board. I mean, a certain member of the executive committee even went to Toi Toi's union building on this point. It is not the case in law that the president can sack the board. You know, there's a procedure.
But it is the print media, and because they are so powerful,
can you please direct the meeting? Because most of the time in this discussion, Ms. Mark takes 20-30 minutes, not asking questions, but continue with her political propaganda. Can you please direct Ms. Mark to be straight to the point so that other people can have time?
Thank you very much. No, Ms. Mark, I think let's take the point. We will have a full discussion on Thursday and next week and all the political points you want to make. But I think let's be fair also to the presenters. Put the questions quickly because we want to hear them. Not you today. We want to hear them today.
Sir, I have put, and these matters we have discussed before. But
fair enough. But I think if you can just get to your point.
Is the proposal simply a purge? If so, why does Mr. Rantau say that the board is in crisis? If somebody had better tell me what the board has done wrong, I haven't seen it. And lastly, has the print media not played an unfortunate role in this case, with exceptions? And I think of some independent group journalists are an exception, but there are other independent group journalists who are sinners. Has the print media managed to reflect really what is going on in the standoff between management and the board, which is a different matter?
I forgot, I thought we were in a podcast school and so on. But we don't mind, if this line of questioning will continue. If you think we can also be given an opportunity to respond politically. But I assume that you are going to have enough chance ourselves as members of parliament to deal our politics at a later stage. Now we're dealing with the presentation and so on. But we can gladly do that and take the whole argument head on. Now, Chair, my question is that around the page, I'll just set the issue, Chair, on 27, which is page 3, which there was an indication that is highly undesirable. You think, Chair, my take is that I assume that you have gone through the section 194 of the Constitution, which is dealing with the removal of the AG and also the public protest. Now, sir, do we want to say those clauses in the Constitution are unconstitutional and are highly undesirable? Is that what you are saying here, the presentation? Because those clauses, say what we have done about the removal, we have copied what is in the Constitution in terms of the Chapter 9 institution. Is this a direct attack to those clauses in the Constitution? Because that is what we have taken, except the last part, which has been talked about. Can I get a clarity, Chair? That contribution also goes beyond to those clauses in the Constitution. Because what we have done, that's what we have done. Chapter 9 institution, for that matter, Chair, will protect our democracy. Got those clauses. Then we take those clauses with its wisdom. We put it there, and then we're told that it's highly undesirable, and so on and so on. What does that mean, sir? I just want to say that because there's nothing new to tell to us, just taking that, and it's there in the Constitution, and I think it to go through the Constitution. What does that mean, sir? If it can be told what is highly undesirable about that, and what is this interference? If you can remove an auditor general and a public protector by his national assembly, what is the SABC board after all? Where we cannot be able to do that. Because I assume we've given ICASA the powers in terms of the Constitution 192 to deal with the overarching broadcasting issues and so on. Not the SABC board. The SABC board is another animal. So we must not confuse ICASA and SABC board. These are two different things. But I'm saying, Chair, when it comes to the question of the board, what you are proposing is just there in the Constitution, and I don't understand what is highly undesirable about that. If I can just be told what is exactly that.
What item in our submission are you referring to, the number of
things?
Thanks, so I just have to move on. Mr. Jovial Rantal, you know, I followed your thread for some time with the group chief executive officer of the SABC. And then having checked the manner how the SABC board and Senate for quite some time. Until, if you remember, we went to that media conference in civil society in Santos, right at some point in time, things were getting to be twisted. I was under the impression that for quite some time, Senate was worried about the fact that the conduct of the SABC board does not allow multiplicity of views, plurality of ideas, opinions, stuff like that. So there's been a bigger concern. I'm surprised now that actually the board looks to be fine. I'm just saying, in terms of the presentation that you are making, you know, I must say, it's a bit shocking to me, having been close to the process between the SANEF and SABC board of relations. Number 20, chairperson, is a matter, number 20, that says, SANEF notes the proposal by communication minister, Ali Matuba Kasoburu, that members of parliament should possibly be prevented from having any direct role in the board appointment. Where did that appear? In which gathering, or in which newspaper, or in which, because I don't know what does that mean, because Ms. Matuba Kasoburu herself, she's a member of parliament. So I like the idea when you say also the officials of the department must not be involved. That's a good thing. I think that we are amenable to a process and a situation where the board of the SABC must be appointed by the broader South African community, because we're a public broadcaster. I mean, I must say that we are, you know, the discussion that must continue. I don't think there's a problem. It is unfortunate that there's a perception that the current ANC ruling party parliament wants to put in ANC people in the board. And I don't know, it looks like a lot of the people have not even made an audit of the political affiliation of the board members of the SABC. You've got two DA supporters in that board. You've got three Azanian People's Organization members in that board. You've got a third Africanist Congress member in that board. You've got three people who are ANC card carrying members, and two or three who tend to be ANC, but in terms of the record, they're not ANC members.
Samantha, you were not here when we were selected. That's the price you pay when you absent from meetings.
That's unfair, because Freedom Front and the shooters from IOP, shooters from Mitsuzan, tried to make us to appoint one guy who's sympathetic to the
Objection, Ms. Carson, I always support independent people. It's a very
let Mr. Kubanu speak.
No, we don't go for political corporations.
Let him make it
quick. What I'd like to say is that Ms. Dinsmart can speak for 10, 15 minutes. When I'm just raising the fact that maybe the reason the DA does not want this board, because maybe because of that their interests will not be taken care of. Because now they're not supposed to lose the coming board, might not have DA people. Maybe they can have it. But what I'm saying is, Mr. Rantau, I agree with you that we don't need to have an overtly political board. You know, it's not, and it's unfortunate that the ANC itself, and ANC likes to do this, they do it to the detriment of their own members. They can appoint people who are not ANC to various institutions and boards, because they think that this is for the whole country, the betterment of the whole country, it's not only for ANC. That's why they've got a board of SABC that's predominantly not ANC. And even people say that this is ambiguous, Zuma, it's not true. I mean, some last thing, what they said on number 22, I just want to know, why did the minister say this? And two, they have proposed that the board must say the legislation must not go and stuff like that. But I must say, Mr. Rantau, the section 19 of the AU Committee on People and Human Rights says that the board, this type of board, and also the United Nations chapter dealing with this population of freedom of expression, it does have this type of board, and that is also carried by MISA, Media Institute of Southern Africa, and quite a number of people, to say that a board of the public broadcaster must not be appointed by parliamentarians or by the president executive in particular. But I do say that there must be a role that parliament plays, but civil society must play a major role in terms of determination of such a board, and I agree with that, Chairperson. But sir, we've got a big asset that we must collect. and that leaders is there for the reality of the situation. Now, I would want to see, I would want to hear from Mr. Lowe, how do we turn this thing around, Mr. Lowe, in terms of making sure that we change the leaders? And Chairman, I must not say that I am disappointed that SANEC has not looked into the media ownership, but the very editors who are there, the editors who are supposed to be guiding them. That thing is the issue that I'm worried about, and I'm supposed to worry about the men, the young men and older men that are so normally selling newspapers on the truth corners with the tattered clothes, with the sense they receive and the truth and the commission. I mean, that's what they sell good on the newspaper, Chairperson. But I'm not going to take it. I'm going to sit here to make their own presentation. That's my input. Thank you very much.
If I may just come in. No.
So surely Khutso meant to say that all of those instruments indicate multi-party committees of parliament. All the ones you mentioned. The multi-party committees of parliament should do the appointment.
They do, except the multi-party, she's quite right, yes.
No, multi-party,
you are right.
Yeah. Can I just throw in a question as well? You see, I've heard both Professor Berger and your input, and I think, all right, you're raising important questions about the processes and the procedures by which we appoint the board. And the point is taken that perhaps the time has come for us to review that the current model that we have might not be the best practice or the desirable procedure. I think what this bill is trying to address is another problem. Let's say we adopt the model that any of you are suggesting for appointment. And after the appointment is done, there's a crisis within the board. The members, they come from diverse backgrounds and can't function for whatever reason, or they're serious malpractice. How do you deal with that problem? That's what we are trying to deal with. Now, in a normal company, because in part, I mean, the SABC is a state-owned business entity. In a normal company, when the board becomes dysfunctional or seriously prejudices the financial viability of that company, there is a shareholders meeting is called up, and they vote to remove them in the interest of the company. In the current legislation, we don't have an adequate mechanism because it is left to the board itself to decide whether it wants to remove just one member or two members or whatever it is. And that's what we're trying to address. So even if you have the best practice of appointment, it doesn't mean that you're going to have the best board ultimately in terms of functionality. What is the proposal that we want? That's what we want to hear from civil society. What mechanisms must be put into place to be called? And that's what people are, because the answer might lie in a better procedure. But that doesn't mean that you're going to have a better outcome ultimately. So, the committee has got, I mean, it's got a short-term arrangement, because I think we all seem to agree that we need a review of the Broadcasting Act. Society has developed, gained a lot of experience in the last 3 years, we've picked up problems along the way. The ultimate question is, to whom must that board be accountable? And if conditions warrant removal, who should have the power? Mr. Mulder and Mr. Peterson. And then we will be coming with their responses.
Yes, thank you, sir. Now, it's also in connection with 22. And, I was part of the process since 1993. I was part of the appointing of the boards, of all the boards, but you're right, the last one I was not here on purpose. And I said it in a statement that you're wasting my time, because we started off very positively in the beginning, deliberating, debating the issues, and then compromising. And slowly, maybe as the power got to 70% on the governing party, it became a one-direction process. Now my question is connected with that, and it says, we've got a proportional voting system. And if you look at models all abroad, all over the world, in Germany, for example, the strongest party will get about 43%. And the problem with the system, why it's not working as it ought to work, is that at the moment we've got a party with 70%. It's part of the history part, but it's not part of the future. The party is on the top at the moment, and that's long stories. But we get to a point when no party is going to have 50%, and I hope I'll still be around here. My question is, in such a situation, this model might work as it is at the moment, because again you're back to wheeling and dealing, and that part of politics, and maybe a win-win situation as we started off in 1994. And I was part of that process, and it was very positive and exciting to be part of it. and it wasn't part of the last process when it was a one-sided view from the Tuli House and we were sitting here just putting stamp on that. So my question is, isn't we debating now an ad hoc situation and not getting a model maybe that is a long-term model for our proportional voting system in the long run?
Jefferson, thanks. I don't want anybody to hold their breath that the 70% will come down soon. Which still needs to reach its 90% mark and stay flat at that level for a long time to come. So we most of us won't be around when that hits the 90%. So that's on that, Jefferson. Now, Jefferson, Mr. Kumar has asked one of the questions earlier about the minister's minister's view. I'm not sure whether he submitted any proposal or any submission to this committee and the appointment of the board. If it is, then it will be great if we can see that. Because it's exactly because of the absence of the minister after numerous complaints from this committee and our own party, nothing was forthcoming. So the committee had to take the initiative. Trying to correct what we think that we could do basically on the third term to fix what we think where some of the problems would lie. Jefferson, it's also amazing that, or kind of ironic, that the Senate will come to the defense of SFC that was led away by the board, led by the group CEO, away from Senate, called them sinners and all kinds of things, while they don't want to be associated with them. So it's great. At least I'm sure that Kirsten made up there for the defense. When we talk about Jefferson, when we talk about accountability to the public, independence, freedom of operation, how do you account to the public? How would SABC account to the public? I assume members of parliament through a public process of voting claims that they represent the public. That was a system set up to do that. Other than that, I mean, is there any organization, or how do you get the public together, the 45 million or close to that together, and say, here's an opportunity for SBC to come and report you, to come and account? I mean, practically, how would it work? When we talk about independence of what or from who and how, you know, it's great to use those names just to throw it up, but how would it practically be implemented in practice? But I think that's where it's in the detail that the devil lies. How do you actually do that? Is it SANEF and SANEF have a gathering and then they say, we represent the public? Is it the ANC on its own that has its own hoodlum that says, now that we've done that, we've reported the public? How do you do that other than holding Parliament accountable to report and represent the public, Jefferson?
Over to SANEF.
Thanks, Mr. Jefferson. I'll answer some questions and Mr. Lowe will pick up others. Mrs. Masters asked the question, why do we say the SABC is in crisis? We refer to some interactions between the SABC board is in crisis. We refer to some interaction between this committee and the SABC board. We also point to the exchange between the SABC board and some members of the executive, and the several court cases that we've seen in the Johannesburg High Court, the fight between the group CEO and the board. And we think those would be adequate to give a very clear indication that there is something not right there. In terms of the misreporting of the SABC, you know, SANEF believes strongly in self-regulation. We have very strong and effective mechanisms in place, and I would invite Honorable Smart to make use of that. You know, if any of our newspapers or even the electronic media, because SANEF does not only represent print media. We believe quite strongly that anybody, any citizen of this country has been misreported. The press ombudsman and the Broadcast Complaints Commission are there as very key institutions that must be strengthened. And to strengthen them means that we must take complaints to them and test them. with regards to the questions raised by Mr. Kumalo and you, Mr. Chairperson, about the mechanism and the last question raised by the honourable member whose name I did not get, I'll ask Mr. Lotte to answer those.
The Honourable Smuts asked to refer to civil society. How does one, how does civil society make an appointment? Well, first of all, the CIB proposals, which were in fact a civil society operation, was agreed to by all the political parties who were members of the CIB, the ANC. I think it was still the DA in those days, your party, sir, and one or two other parties. So it wasn't as if that was an idea that came out of the blue without any political support. It did have political support, but when the government changed hands, the new government decided to make it a purely political process by keeping it within the parliamentary confines. The selection, not the nomination. The nomination comes from the public, but the selection and the hearings are all conducted within the parliamentary confines, and that was decided after the election. But before then, all the political parties had agreed to that system. We have the Judicial Service Commission, which is a body which is composed of largely lawyers and one or two some MPs, but it is a distinct organisation. Which appoints judges, and it doesn't seem to have any difficulty in doing that. And what we're proposing is a similar body, but composed of the civil society. Don't forget, we are dealing with an institution, the Public Service Broadcaster, which is a very special institution. It is it is unique. It's generally around about the only body of its kind within a country, and it requires to be dealt with in a special way, which brings me to the question raised about the Chapter 9 principles that I quoted. I spoke about the Chapter 9 principles, and the suggestion was, because I said that the rest of the Chapter 9 provisions for dismissal of people should be ignored, is a suggestion that I'm saying those are not proper provisions. They are perfectly proper provisions for the institutions for which they have been developed: the public protector, the auditor general, the national prosecuting authority, etc., etc. Perfectly appropriate for those organisations which are appointed generally by the governing party. What we are talking about, and I'll come back to the point that I made a little earlier, that we are talking about a unique institution which everybody said should be independent of political influence, and party political influence in particular. And that requires a special set of rules, and that's what we are saying. I can't recall where the minister made that statement about the need, but what I will do is I will go back to the source from which I derived it, and I'll send copies to this committee of that source. But my impression was that it was an interview in one of the newspapers, and obviously I would have to go and find it. But I'll send it to this committee. Media ownership. Well, we are talking about media ownership. But not the print media ownership, because it doesn't figure in the legislation. It's got nothing to do with it. Mm. We are talking about the ownership of the SABC. Mm. But of course, your complaint, sir, is well taken. We recognise that there are deficiencies in media ownership. We, for instance, got too few owners of newspapers in South Africa, although we happen to have quite a number of newspapers, which is quite remarkable considering the size of our cities. And particularly when you compare that with overseas countries, where there may be one or two newspapers in a city of the size of New York compared to the seven or eight
The ad hoc committee, your suggestion, sir, was that we shouldn't change something now because the circumstances may change which will make the present system better. But what we're opposed to is that the present system is a political system, and there's nothing that can make that better, sir, in relation to a public service broadcaster. So we would suggest that we do really do convene a meeting at which all these issues can be discussed and a new form of process be devised for the selection of the board. On the question of MPs being representatives of the public, that is quite true. They are representatives of the majority parliament, majority party in parliament, which means they are representatives of a section of the public. That may very well be a majority of the population. I think under the present term, they are not representative of the majority of the population. I think it's something like 49%. That is the ruling party. To suggest that therefore they should encompass an institution like the SABC, which is a public service broadcaster, and I emphasize public service broadcaster, wider than just one area of the public, it's not tenable. Thank you, sir.
Must that go back to that number 20 that Mr. Lowe, in most of the documents you've given us, you quote quite a lot of books and people and stuff like that. On this one, if you can't recall, it's unfortunate. It's a very serious matter. It's a matter that talks about the minister making a proposal that parliament must not be involved. And I must say that sometimes in Sarantau it goes to the debate and the discussion about protection, the issue of the self-regulation and the issue of the media tribunal, where people can just write or say things without the record. I'm just saying that it might become a problem if you can't get that information, so that it is, because we wanted to take on the proposals as they come. And we look into them so that whatever decision we arrive at, contrary to the perception that this is just a wasting time, it's not. You know, I would really want us to be quite sure of that matter. Otherwise, if we are not, and if it is not that, we must just drop it, because it does have implications for the discussions that we're having now. And it also borders on the issue of the executive and the legislature. You know, it's something that I feel quite strong about the matter.
Thank you. Can I also just throw in one question? You don't have to respond, but I think it's for all the participants. You see, we've heard quite a bit about the central role that civil society must play in holding the independent board accountable. But there is a question of financial accountability. If you are dispersing public funds, there must be a reporting mechanism. Now, you can't disperse public funds and then you ask the civil society coalition to hold those people accountable. I think these are questions that even when people are presenting, I know that civil society sometimes tend to view things from their own perspective and feel that the answer lies giving greater power to civil society. But I think one needs to take into account other legal requirements also. How you use public funds, how you account for the usage of those funds. I think those are things that need to be kept in mind as well. But it's part of the discussion and dialogue that we're going to be having. Thank you very much, Sanat. Mastoni, have you got an urgent question?
No, that is addition to some of the things that Mr. Lowe should explain to us. I don't think he has given a proper definition of what a public representative is. If you could go back and really redefine what a public representative is, I don't think it's proper what he said.
All right, that's noted. Thank you very much. Can we now call upon the next three presenters? I take it that it's going to be 1, 2, 3 in a row, and then we have a discussion after that. Over to the, let me just get the names right now. Save Our SABC Coalition. You tell us what's the coalition, and then the MMP and the Freedom of Expression Institute, and IBM. They're coming in together. Right, that's fine.
I just want to make sure that everybody has got our oral representation document. It's very important because it actually includes our proposed bill. And we promised in our written submissions that we would actually draft a bill for consideration by the committee. So I just want to make sure that you have, because they look very similar, but it's as the title says, oral representations by the Civil Society Coalition, say our SSC. They haven't got it. Okay.
I'm told it's submission number 10.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. Oh. All right, it's been distributed, it's fine.
Okay, so sorry about that, but we promised in our written submission that we would draft this bill, and the bill is included in the oral submission. So hopefully you will all get copies of that, and then please come to us after if you haven't. Okay. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much to the members of the committee for giving us this opportunity to represent and put forward our opinions on the draft amendment bill. We are the Save Our SABC Coalition, and just to explain a little bit to people who this coalition is, we represent 15 different organizations, including trade unions, also the major trade union federation, KASATU, other trade unions such as BAMAU, civil society organizations, NGOs, also on top of that, a number of individuals, academics, and freedom of expression activists. So we believe that we do represent a large number of different organizations. To directly deal with the issues that you put on the table as a committee, we would like to say that the amendment bill focuses only on the removal of board members, and that, we believe, is a problem. We think that you need to focus much more broadly. And also, in the medium to long term, as a number of other people have actually said, we believe that you need to... I'm really sorry, I just missed out on the slide. I was suddenly wondering what was happening there. And also, just to say, I'm very sorry, but I am going to be presenting what Prakashini Govender was going to be presenting from Kasati. So I'm clearly not Prakashini Govender. But she has been taken away to work on the energy bill. So I'm going to be presenting her section. So the piecemeal, what we're saying is that it's unfortunate to deal with the Broadcasting Act in this piecemeal fashion. We believe that it won't actually solve the SABC crisis. And as a number of other people have said, we believe that you need a proper assessment of the root causes of the crisis, and then you need a green paper, white paper process, which is a consultative process, and then eventually leading to a comprehensive new SABC Act. However, what we're saying is that if the scope of this amendment bill is in fact broadened, we will support it as a short-term measure. But we have got very specific things that we're saying about how this amendment bill needs to be broadened, and we're going to go through that in some detail. Okay, so what we're saying is that the problem is that the bill that has been presented to us focuses only on removal of board members. So what we're saying is that we think that the amendment bill, even in the immediate term, needs to look at some further issues. So it needs to look at the appointment of the board, needs to look at qualifications of board members, disqualification of board members, and conflict of interest issues. And further,
we have specifically made a whole lot of recommendations around the interim board, so that we ensure that it actually is drafted in terms of the public interest. So just to say very briefly, because Justine Limpet-Law, who is our broadcasting expert, will be going into this in more detail. She'll be actually taking you through the bill. But just to explain the principles behind this, our appointment clauses, we believe, ensure greater public participation and transparency and deal with appointment also of executive members of the board, which is presently a gap in the Broadcasting Act. Because obviously, if we're talking about the board, it consists of executive members and non-executive members. And so it's a critical issue that immediately we deal with the issue of executive members of the board as well. Further, in terms of the qualification clauses, we believe that these, we have actually tightened up on the clauses that exist within the Broadcasting Act. And we believe that now, in terms of what we're proposing, board members will be committed to freedom of expression, broadly representative of South African society and various interest groups, and will have the necessary qualifications and experience. And we specify exactly what those qualifications and experience need to be. And then in terms of our disqualification and conflict of interest clauses, they're just a lot more wide-ranging than what is presently included in the Broadcasting Act. And we believe that this will ensure the board's independence for both government and commercial interests. And then in terms of our interim board clauses, we are very worried about the interim board. It's not that we're saying that the committee needs to be exceptionally cautious around that, but we have engaged with it, and we basically have said that we need to ensure that the interim board is interim in practice. And we have stipulated in terms of how we've drafted our piece of legislation, we have said that it may not, should not sit for longer than 3 months. And given that it is appointed by the president, it should never ever sit over an election period. And we're very worried that an interim board might be able to sit over an election period. And also what we have done in terms of those four appointees that are basically left kind of open, we have stipulated very specific skills and experience that we think are required or needed for that interim board. I'm now going to hand over to Justine Limpet-Law, who's going to actually take you through some of the issues of the bill that we propose.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that people have this, just so that they can start looking at it, because we thought it would be helpful to be able to provide specific wording to the committee on our proposal. So those are contained in this document labeled Annexure A to the Oral Representations, and it's titled Oral Representations by the Civil Society Coalition. It's on page 7 of the Oral Representations is where our draft will start, so that if the committee finds that particular clauses that we've suggested would be helpful, they can be taken right from that bill and inserted. The bill that the committee has proposed, as we said, makes provision for amendments to Section 16 of the Broadcasting Act only, and it includes, which we think, positive things such as the inserting subsections to deal with the criteria for disqualification. And then also things that we think are the way that they're currently drafted very problematic, and that is the presidential appointment of the interim board. But the bill as drafted by this committee, we respectfully think that it doesn't address even the short-term current crisis issues of the Broadcasting Act. We support previous speakers that have said, as we have, that there needs to be a long-term process, including a green and a white paper. But we understand and we're sympathetic to the committee's need to deal with the current crisis at the SABC. But we think that there needs to be changes to the bill drafted by the committee to make sure that happens in an effective way to deal with the crisis and not really to augment it or to replace it with a different one. So the first thing that we've done, instead of just looking at Section 15, we've proposed a number of amendments to four, it's not a whole wide-ranging thing, it's just to four sections. The first one deals with Section 13, we are very concerned about the appointment process that happened in relation to the last board, and think that there are procedural adjustments and changes that can be made to Section 13 to try and ensure that those problems do not reoccur. The first thing is limiting nominations by senior public officials to make sure that it's genuinely a public nominations process as opposed to a political process. The second thing is the publication of detailed CVs. There's been a great deal of unhappiness, public unhappiness, around the lack of qualifications and expertise as evidenced by the CVs of certain of the board members that were appointed. Thirdly, we think it would be important, as a number of other public institutions are required to make written reasons for their decisions, we are suggesting that written evaluations be published and be made by Parliament, by this committee, and published by this committee as to why people are appointed or not appointed to the SABC. In our experience, requiring written evaluations helps to focus on exactly what really are the good and the rationale and the justification for why particular people are appointed, why decisions are taken. We think that the provisions of Section 13(4) of the Broadcasting Act, those are the criteria for board members, are problematic. And what we have suggested is to improve those in Section 13 in detail. We want to ensure that there are appropriate skills and experience. We also want to clarify, and we think that this is a critical point that is at the root of the current crisis at the SABC and that we don't think has been addressed properly, is that there is a fundamental lacuna in the Broadcasting Act around who appoints the executive members of the board and how they are appointed and removed. It has been a gap that has been identified in the Broadcasting Act since the Broadcasting Act has been in place, and it is a problem that needs to be dealt with. And we think it's important, in line with corporate governance principles, that it is the non-executive members of the board that appoint the executive members. We are also suggesting a staggered process of non-executive board appointments to ensure institutional cohesion and to ensure that it's not a case of every 3 years you've got a brand new board that doesn't know the ropes, that doesn't know the institutional culture, and the SABC doesn't have a sense of historical progression through the board appointments. We're also proposing amendments to Section 14 to provide for the appointment of senior management. Again, this is a gap where it's not clear who actually appoints them. We suggest that this be done by the CEO after consultation with the board. The CEO and the executive team are the people that must put senior management in place after consultation by the board. Like the bill that is being proposed by the committee, we also propose a replacement of Section 15 to set, and we agree with objective criteria for the removal of all board members, and have been very worried about the lack of that in the Broadcasting Act, and frankly commend the committee for trying to put those in place. We think, however, that it's important that not just be in place for the non-executive board members, but also for the executive board members, which is currently a gap in the Broadcasting Act. And then we come to the vexed issue and the difficult issue about the interim board appointed by the president. And we want to put on record, I think, our understanding as the coalition about how this could work in a way that is positive. The first thing is that we are envisaging an interim board happening only in the extraordinary circumstance where every single member of the board is removed for cause in accordance with the earlier subsections of Section 15. In such a case, we would support an appointment by the President on the following very limited grounds. firstly, that there are always more non-executive members, and we suggest there has to be five. Not up to five, which could mean one, but five members of non-executive members than executive members. Secondly, we think that there needs to be very strict criteria, specifically to avoid a hand-picking of political appointments. And what we have suggested are criteria for the five specific people, people with broadcasting experience. You can see from our suggestions, academics or attorneys or advocates with detailed experience, people with financial experience in running large corporations, to make it clear that this is an interim board to act as a caretaker board in the extraordinary circumstances that all of the board members are removed. Lastly, and we think importantly, and as Kate has said, an interim board, we believe, can operate for a maximum of 3 months and never over an election period. Thirdly, and we've put this in the in our proposed amendments, so it's not included on the slide here, is also that an interim board cannot change the editorial policies of the SABC. And the aim of the interim board is to keep an organisation ticking over until a properly chosen board in accordance with international best practice can happen. We understand that if an entire board is removed, there is a gap, just as because processes of appointing people take time and there needs to be an interim board for that period. No more than 3 months, never over an election period, and the people are chosen precisely because of their qualifications and experience which are carefully proposed there. And then we also propose a replacement of Section 16 to strengthen the disqualification criteria of people that can be appointed to the board or indeed to the interim board to avoid conflicts of interest, to protect against political and commercial interference, and to provide for proper disclosures of potential conflicts of interest. And because of that, because of the way that we've drafted our proposed Section 16, we propose deleting Section 17 that currently exists in the Broadcasting Act because it is essentially being collapsed into a disqualification and conflicts of interest provisions in Section 16.
Thank you. And now I've
got word from the Media Monitoring Project just to put forward some of the Media Monitoring Project's particular views on the bill.
Good morning. Thank you very much. This is a one quick word of support for the presentation already made. It's a wonderful word. It's four letters long, five letters. Ditto to all of the things that Justine and Kate have already said in terms of our submission as a coalition of NGOs. Our point at the Media Monitoring Project is a fairly simple one, but we think an important one. It relates to appointments and in relation to the nomination processes. We believe that the bill in its current form, and just to reiterate, will lead to further crises around the SABC. I think it's clear that the SABC needs to be independent from political influence and interference. And this independence we talk about as being legislative independence, regulated, operational independence, etc. But also quite critically, I think for the people of South Africa, is that it must be perceived to be free from political influence and interference. The MMP submits, that political parties should be excluded from being able to nominate board members. And this is this is something that the coalition has not taken a position on. This is the MMP's view. Why do we think that this should be the view? I think because of the history of the SABC as well as the recent crises surrounding the SABC. I think it's done it an enormous amount of harm. And all of us, I think we need to remember, we should be upset about this. This is our public broadcaster. It belongs to all of us, and we need to be very, very distressed that its credibility has been so harmed. I think the core principle of public broadcasting is independence, and again, this goes to the root of it. And why political parties? Well, specifically because they'll necessarily always promote the views of their party as is their right, but that such views are always necessarily going to be biased, leading to real or perceived undermining of the credibility and independence of the SABC. Over to Jane.
Over to Jane from Freedom of Expression Institute.
Thanks. I'm going to be very brief because I'm speaking to one point and one point only, but relates partly to the contents of the bill, but also partly to the bigger picture as well. And this issue concerns the SABC's Articles of Association. Now, what we'd like to do is to bring to the attention of the committee a concern that we've held for some time now about the independence of the SABC. Now, in terms of the Broadcasting Act, the SABC enjoys editorial independence. Yet it seems like what the corporatization of the SABC has done since the promulgation of the Broadcasting Act was that it reconfigured the relationship between the Ministry of Communications and the board. And what it's meant is that the minister is the sole shareholder of the board, now enjoys significant levels of control over aspects of the SABC through the back door, if you like, of the Articles of Association. Now, we just wanted to bring to the attention of the committee the fact that we've done an analysis of the Articles of Association, both the 2003 version and the revised version. And we've been advised by counsel that the Articles of Association may well be unlawful and even unconstitutional because they violate the requirements in Section 1311 of the Broadcasting Act for the board to control its affairs. The article gives too much power to the executive through the Ministry of Communications to control aspects of the board's affairs, which strips the board of its ability to act independently on crucial issues. Now, according to our advice, if a court were approached for a declarator on the matter, the Articles of Association would almost certainly be declared unlawful. Now, some of the ways in which the board's independence is violated are as follows. In terms of the Articles of Association, the board must submit its corporate plans for approval to the minister and the SABC, must consider any comments on the business plan. Now, lodging of a business plan for approval, especially, may invite censorship and threaten independence. If the board is not expected to lodge its editorial policies with the minister for approval, it should not be expected to lodge the documents that enable the editorial policy to be achieved either, as there is an unbreakable thread between the business plan and the editorial policy. Secondly, the board is required to comply with any statutes or any resolutions passed by a general meeting. Now, given the fact that the minister is the sole shareholder on behalf of the state, has total control over general meetings, the board could be made to comply with resolutions that are deeply compromising to the independence of the SABC. Thirdly, and most importantly for the purposes of this bill, the non-executive directors must recommend to the minister the appointment of the executive directors, which interferes with the ability of the board to make appointment decisions independently of the minister. Now, one of these appointments, significantly, is that of the group chief executive officer. Now, given that the GCO is also the editor-in-chief, it could be argued that the minister has indirect control over the SABC's editorial content through the appointment of the GCO. Now, while it may be argued and has been argued that the power to appoint is non-discretionary, I think we should bear in mind that just recently there has been an appointment where discretion has been exercised. And in relation to that, I just want to make reference to the SABC board minutes of the 12th of January 2008. We spoke about the appointment of the chief operations officer. And it says that it was agreed that the chairperson will liaise with the minister to ascertain her response to the recommendations that were made to her by the board. I believe that Mbuzombebe was recommended, CIO. And this process must be completed by the 31st of March 2008. Now, from what I'm led to understand, Mbuzombebe wasn't appointed. which says to me that this power is not entirely non-discretionary. Now, what we're arguing in essence is that the Act must be amended to ensure that the non-executive directors are responsible for appointing the executive directors. So we're just amplifying the point that Justine White of Limpet Law has made. And also, to the extent that the articles are illegal, we think that they must be amended to ensure that the board appointed in terms of the amendment bill enjoys the necessary levels of independence. And I think that is an issue of concern for the short term, the medium term, and the long term. Thank you. By the way, we have a memorandum on these issues that set out in detail council's advice on the issue, and we'll make it available to the committee.
Thank you very much. Is there one more?
There's going to be one more presentation from the IPO and from Zahira Bayek.
Zahir Bayat. I'm a member of the EXCO, the Independent Producers Organization, and while I wait for Kate to get the presentation, I'll just introduce the IPO. We represent, we're the leading organization representing producers of television and films in South Africa. We're also the major supplier of local content to the public broadcaster. With the exclusion of news and sport, we produce drama, actuality, documentary, children, youth, variety, entertainment, and educational programs. We're passionate supporters of the vital role of the public broadcaster in the life of our country. Just for your information, what producers do is initiate and manage television projects from idea development to scripting to budget to finance to raising the production budget to distribution to managing the process and ensuring that these programs continue and that are relevant to society. Our members are responsible for approximately 70% of all the content you see on television. That's locally produced content. We see our role as collators of our history living within communities. We gather and curate our stories and commit them to collective memory. We're deeply concerned that the current crisis between the board and the executive management will cause profound and lasting damage to our important cultural industry. We presented to this portfolio committee before, barely a year ago, about the challenges we face as independent producers, and just to remind you what some of those challenges are. There was to create sustainability within our industry, which agreed to grow it and development, to create employment and minimize unemployment, to speed up transformation, to grow the independent production industry economically, and to capture our rich cultural heritage. Those are all the things we believe are under threat directly through the current crisis. If I may, I'd like to just address some of the issues that came up while I'm going through my presentation. And one of the questions was, why is there a crisis, or what is this actual crisis? Well, the production of television and radio programming requires functioning administration and sound business practice. Since most important production and budget decisions require board approval, the fallout and the conflict between the board and the executive management is crucial. In the past, we've seen how fallout impacts on programming, and while the impact is small right now, over the next 6 to 9 months, which is the production cycle and the lead time, and beyond the 6 to 9 months, we believe there's going to be a severe impact. The way we've seen that emerge on just through our membership, is there have been long delays in programming being contracted, resulting in additional costs through keeping things going. Extensive investigations by the SABC and a culture of mistrust leading to costly delays in processes and in some cases even litigation. Small production companies whose sole source of income is SABC commission do not have the cash flow to be able to ride out these delays and cause them to close down and leading to unemployment. Internal staff within the SABC, particularly middle management, which is at the coalface of delivery of programming to transmission, are suffering tremendous amounts of stress, and a lot of them are in very poor spirits and becoming ill due to the high levels of stress they experience. there's a trend that's beginning to emerge of regular rebroadcasting of old programming, which is eroding confidence of audiences and ratings in the SABC's ability to deliver relevant content. Independent contractors to the SABC are then suffering from a sudden unemployment, especially actors and technicians, and they are the lifeblood of the broadcaster. Having followed events at the SABC over the last few years, we'd like to point out that there have been several significant problems in management and governance at the SABC that precede the current crisis. And those relate to some of the things I've discussed already. The impact of the current crisis on the day-to-day management of the SABC and on the delivery of its mandate is not well documented in the media. However, our members have first-hand experience of this impact already. And if the Portfolio Committee would like specific examples, we can canvass our members for those specific examples and bring them to you. We believe that a real and prompt solution is needed to this crisis. However, as much as we are concerned about the crisis in the SABC itself, we're equally concerned that a quick fix amendment to the Broadcasting Act will have problematic ramifications in the future. We support the position of the Civil Society Coalition, and our focus is on ensuring that the SABC remains independent, that it has good governance, and that it functions efficiently. We believe that all three of these things are currently under threat. While we share the Portfolio Committee's frustrations at the apparent impasse, we are also mindful of the need to protect the legal framework that entrenches the independence of the SABC. The SABC Charter embodied in law states that the corporation enjoys freedom of expression, journalistic, creative, and programming independence as enshrined in the Constitution. We believe that this actual and perceived independence of the SABC is of national importance. We further believe that this independence depends on the SABC board primarily as its custodian. It's our considered view that the proposed amendment would undermine this independence and undermine the perception of this independence. We also believe that the current crisis was at least partly caused by actions that took place in the process of appointing the current board. In this context, we have a number of concerns regarding the proposed amendment to the Broadcasting Act. Our comments on the proposals are that the Act and proposed amendment sets out grounds for removal of an individual member of the board, but does not set out grounds for the removal of the board as a whole, except by implication that all the members of it were unable to carry out their duties. We believe this is too broad power, which could pose a threat, real and perceived, to the SABC's independence. We therefore recommend that the Broadcasting Act is not amended at this time. We respectfully submit that the Portfolio Committee considers taking the following alternative action. Recommend to the President of the Republic that the Commission of Inquiry be established into the conduct of the SABC Board, and that the Commission be appointed with terms of reference that allow it to consider and make recommendations concerning the appointment process of the Board and processes for removal of a Board when it is not performing, and make recommendations for changes in law that this may require. With respect to the Chair's earlier question to SANEF regarding removal of Board members, we think that the process will be able to address reform in the appointment process, as well as mechanisms for removing or replacing board members when necessary. We believe that this commission would be widely supported by interested constituencies and have a profound impact on the perceived independence of the SABC. We agree that the inquiry be given a time limit of 3 months. We request that the board be asked to resign on the grounds that there has been an irretrievable breakdown in its ability to perform its duties. An acting board should be appointed of 4 members of good standing, and that should be done within 10 days of the launch of inquiry to act as custodians in the interim period. That's it, thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Mr. Peterson.
Chairperson, I was hoping that I would be allowed to say save the SABC, vote INC. But we're not in that process yet, Mr. What's the name? I'm not going to do that. Not do that.
You better take your seat.
I've got a media interview with the HIVC. He said it starts with the 18.
No, Jameson, I said I'm not going to say it. maybe much later. Maybe that question to start with my question. To save the SABC coalition. Where do you come from now? I tell you what, because the challenges that SABC was confronted with, it didn't start when we submitted this amendment. There were challenges. I can imagine the blacklisting and just all of that. That protest. And guys, IDU didn't exist.
or you're busy with all kinds of other work. Because we're deadly silent at that time. And it continues. I just was just raising like one particular issue. We had a state SMT coalition, I imagine, at the heart of civil society that wants the best for the SMT. So you have a particular role to play by being silent, and it means you either consent with what has been happening or whatever. So I would appeal to you to just look at that role of you again. You know, Justine, I think she raised a question about the three executive board members, and you're absolutely right. We have oversight over the non-executive board members at 12, and yet they, through enlisting the help of the minister, appoints three executive board members whose work has an impact on what we view as that of the whole board. And yet we have no oversight, we have no response, no part in appointing or whatever in terms of them. So, you know, just in terms of that, three executive board members, I'm not suggesting for one moment that we should appoint them. But surely that we need to look at it kind of differently to make sure that part of the related appointment, we need to strengthen that part. Now, I want to agree that we should consider the lot system of the board members, because what you have currently, end of December, the old board stops, 1st of January, the new board starts. In this case, we were kind of fortunate there were six of the old board, I nearly said leftovers, but of the old board. In it itself, you can have like a continuation. And that is not by design, it's purely by accident. But if by design, you would rather see people overlapping. Like we have cars and the other boards that are overlapping, there's a continuation of what happened, and maybe one should consider the lot system, including the possibility if you have a chair appointed that even the lot system also has effect on the term of the chairperson, that you have in fact better continuation and longer continuation of that. Now, do you think that we have the time to have a complete overhaul? Because it seems that we are concerned about this, our short-term approach. Do you think that we have the time to do a complete overhaul of the act to make sure that the outcome is effective? Doing this, given that we have 8 months left of our term, before somebody else comes in, 8 months, 12 months, whatever, before somebody else comes in and to do that, and would it be fair to do an overhaul of that piece of legislation in that state?
I think this presentation, although I can't say who because of a lot of presentations that have been made, I think start to talk to the amendments as well that they also go beyond the amendments as well, but at least start to talk to the issues and so on. With some of the issues, maybe we'll be able to reflect as we move towards also dealing with the ministers and so on. I think that is encouraging. But I just want to check one thing around the ITO. I think what has been raised by Randy, Mr. Peter, is correct to say maybe we need a continuous engagement because you see a lot of issues are coming up now when we have started this process. But in between that, there are no people who come forward with raising those issues. And so I think we need that type of engagement and so on, because some of the issues, they seem to be profound, they are problems which need to be addressed. But you see, we're not going to have amendments always to hear these issues. We must find a way on how to interact so that we deal with these matters as they are happening and so on. But the last one, on the last presentation, under page 2A, that we leave the act as it is, then we recommend to the president, the committee, and so on. But I'm saying, the difficulty is that we didn't go this route because we wanted to.
The reality is that almost everyone else has washed their hands about this problem which we are currently facing at the SABC. No one wanted to take the ownership and intervene and deal with the matter throughout the hierarchy. As we have concluded to say, maybe we are the only people who can serve our own SABC to come with this amendment. I think it should also be understood in that context. That everyone washed their hands. The minister said something and so on and so on. That law does not allow us and so on and so on. So as a last result, because we have enacted the law, we have to look into the law, what are the shortcomings, so that we cure that shortcoming and ensure that no one in future will wash his hand or her hand to say nothing I can do. I think that is important, but I want to check about this recommendation, whether it will work after we follow all the public indication that no one wants to take responsibility. Is it realistic to say we recommend this to who will do what after people clearly said they can't do anything, the law does not allow it or them?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on page 3 of the oral presentation where they express the challenges impacting on public broadcasting. The vague wording in the SABC charter, which has resulted in a lack of clarity about the public broadcaster's real mandate. What does this mean?
The first presenter who was actually leading the delegation did not tell us who she is, except if she's not broadcasting. Because I know it's difficult to address her without knowing the name. I'm sorry, we did not hear who you are.
I'm Kate Skinner, and I'm the coordinator of the SABC campaign, and I'm very sorry, that was a big oversight, because you're right, I am more than not precisely governor. Sorry about that.
No, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to say that we noted substantive recommendation in relation to Section 15, 16, and Division of 17. The reason we have actually focused on Section 15 only was the fact that we realized that there is a defect in the law in relation to the board and how the board can just decide to remove or not to remove itself. For an example, when the board had leaked a memorandum on the 4th of April, they then said that they were going to investigate the matter. Until today, they are still investigating. Now, as an example of a situation where Parliament or the President or anybody might not be able to do anything, because Articles of Association protect them and they give the board the power to decide the removal of a member or members. Now, therefore, it means if all of them do wrong things, nobody will remove them because they decide on this. So that's what actually necessitated this process and the proposal itself. However, we do acknowledge to the fact that the SABC Broadcasting Act of 1999. What happened is that you would realize that the Constitution was passed only on the 10th of May 1996. Now, in the Constitution, it does not state the SABC as the name of the ICASA, but it does talk about Chapter 192, talk about the Independent Broadcasting Authority. By that time, the IBA, because the IBA was still there, it's only that the IBA and SABCA merged in September 1999 to create the ICASA. Now, therefore, there are areas in the broadcasting that are quite wrong that would have to deal with a broader spectrum. The issues, as Peter has talked about, the issue of the term of office of the board, the number of the board members, the issue that relates to the appointment of the total terms instead of modern numbers. So that in any event, the president of parliament thinks that there's something wrong, one or two members, then they can recommend maybe a larger number. So those are confusion, but two, conditions have changed drastically from what they used to be by then and to date. So therefore, an overhaul entire board is quite important. I was not aware until today that actually the minister is like a chief editor-in-chief of the SABC in the context of what you say, that if he then you make the CEO editor-in-chief and CEO is appointed by the board and the board accounts to the minister, then consequently it creates that impression. And I must say that Mr. Lowe's organization, MISA, in Zimbabwe, in Zambia, 2 years ago, the workshop which attended with MISA, and then they did point out to the fact that there's a perceived political interference on the basis of how the board disappointed. You know, and in terms of the shareholder government, so these are discussions that continue that we must engage on all the time. You know, but we also have pointed out to the minister also that we would have wished to have a commission of inquiry. It's a pity the time when the minister we have that discussion, the SSBC board managers and others decided to march and say that they want that commission of inquiry. So it was a bit of a problem. You know, that's to say, so I'm not saying that we are not pursuing the matter, but we thought it was important. But we do note those substantive issues that relate to the amendments. It's a matter that I think we have to discuss and look at them quite seriously. Well, about the deletion of 17, I'm not so sure whether all of them actually collapse into 16 in terms of the proposal by Justin White. But I think these are noted. The only thing that we must sort out, they are talking about the interim board, that it must be not more than 3 months. It must not be during an election period. I don't understand what does that mean. Does it mean that we must not anticipate a crisis of the SABC during the election period? And if that happens, what does that mean? I mean, an event that it could happen in that. And lastly, they're saying that the non-executive board members must be 5 and not more than that. And I think there's an issue that Ms. Smart also has raised a point about why we want to leave the executive board members, you know, in the interim process, and they outnumber the non-executive. It's a matter that I'm sure we can discuss and engage on. I think it's the issue that now on Section 15B on the interim process. What do we do? And you also ask, why do you want to leave the process to the president? Is it what you are saying? You're not to check what was the view on that matter. Sorry, sir, for taking too long. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, my colleague misunderstood me. My objection to the entire sacking and interim board proposal is that the executive, as in the executive of this country, is now invited to install the non-executive board members, whereas this is exactly what made everyone so unhappy until now. This is now written into the law, and people are actually contemplating supporting it. I can't. Chair, wonderful intervention of Randy, to whom one must listen. He's very subtle. That prompted me to ask that. I think that this coalition, you are the same people or bodies, are you not, who did very, very fine work at the time of transition when a fading authoritarian regime was in place. And it was important to get a public broadcaster in place on the principles of democracy. But look, I mean, I'm sorry, the truth is now that we are entering now a really difficult era, which shows it tends to totalitarianism, I'm sorry, but when the courts of the land are told by the person in charge of a party that they are counter-revolutionary, you're heading to something far more difficult. And therefore, I don't think... You see, may I ask you the following? Could I ask Jane Duncan, for example, who has put something very usefully on the table. It's something we used to discuss with Prof. Tawane Kupia. But, you know, it was never that relevant because the previous board, which is where the problem was, as people have said, the previous board was the problem. The previous board was, in fact, shielding its CEO, having managed to lose a good one, who now is in the private sector. But is it possible for the coalition perhaps to contemplate going to court on the disparities between the shareholder agreement or the articles and the law? Because believe me, I mean, how far do you think we're going to get with it? I can sit nowhere. And so I would think that would be a fruitful thing to do rather than supporting an interim arrangement. And I just wanted to say hello to the IPO, whom we've had the pleasure of discussing things with before, and to ask him what progress. Because we know that the problem is content. A board, of course, is not there to look after content. We know there's a problem with content. The problem at the SABC is the CEO, who had lost South Africans their soccer rights, has now lost them their cricket rights. I know that none of this comes up in discussion. And who has tabled a strategic plan for the corporation, which is, I mean, it's just, you can't even take it seriously. And so it's not true to my colleague that everyone else has washed their hands of the problem at the SABC. My impression was that the board was trying to deal with the problem, which is the CEO, but he keeps going to court. Right? But what I want to ask you this, please, we had a long session
on your and well-identified problem with your intellectual property rights. And unless that is sorted, your sector, which is crucially important, can't really get on a good financial and professional footing. And let's not forget, and this is all our discussions, what we're supposed to be traversing to now is DTT, the broadcasting terrestrial terrain that's supposed to be opening up. The SABC should shrink in size and importance. It will, but it's going to take a little bit of time, but we will soon have lots of terrestrial channels, hopefully. Now, did you, Dalim Pofu said here, he poo-pooed after we listened to you, said, but in fact he had been having discussions, and this, that, and the other was in progress. And I'm sorry we sort of seldom get the chance to come back to people to ask whether things are in fact sorted. But is that thing sorted?
These political assaults, we will respond. The rest are short. We won't keep quiet anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We were all assaulted in our presence. Mm-hmm. And then we keep quiet. Deliberate. We will respond.
I'm going to start and answer some of the questions and then obviously hand over to all my colleagues. The first thing was a question from Randy about where were you? And I think the big issue now is to say that, the coalition is now in full swing. We've done a huge amount of work, particularly around this amendment bill. And I think that it's work that we're hoping is going to have a whole lot of benefits. It's around this bill, but it would also go much broader than that. It would look at the green paper, white paper process. It would look at various legal cases, etc. And also, we really welcome the idea of consulting with the parliamentarians, the MPs, on a regular basis. That would be excellent. We certainly have started to talk to the chair, to Ishmael Vardy, and we welcome that as a way forward. That would be excellent, and we would certainly send through your documents, etc. Now, there's just one other question that I wanted to quickly answer, and this was about the bill, and you saying, do you want to try and overhaul the whole of the Broadcasting Act within an 8-month period? And that's not what we're saying. Actually, what we're saying is that we're wanting to broaden the scope of the bill that you have tabled in terms of looking at various immediate issues. And then what we're wanting to do, which is definitely, as you're saying, a much broader process and that needs to be and must be consultative, is this green paper, white paper process. So we're looking at two things. We're looking at an immediate term issue, which is the bill you tabled, and then we're looking at this absolutely essential longer, medium to long term process around a consultative green paper, white paper process.
I'd like to add and also then to address some of the questions that were specifically dealt with on the legal issues. To reiterate what Kate said about the crisis at the SABC, and those things are set out in our paragraph 2.4 on page 3 of our submissions. Those long-term things around funding, around the problems, around the charter, I'm going to deal with that specifically just now, the structural dysfunction between the public and the commercial structures in the SABC, that really is a long-term project. That's a project that I know the SABC has been considering for a number of years. That's a project that the minister understands needs to happen with the SABC, and I don't think that we should be waiting until after the election. We might, in political parlance, it's common to talk about a lame duck president towards the end of the term, but surely you're not a lame duck parliament. And why can't we get the process at least initiated with instructions from this committee to the Department of Communications, sort of terms of reference, if you will, to start initiating a proper consultative policy review process of the SABC, but one that goes through the proper steps. A green paper process raising the questions, a white paper process taking proper public consultations to develop the policy, and thereafter a properly thought out, carefully structured SABC Act to put that all in place.
that will take time, I think it can be started immediately. And I think it can specifically address the issues that have been raised by a number of people, not just some of the immediate issues. I think I was very taken with a number of Professor Berger's suggestions around really trying to open up representativity and inclusiveness, particularly of the regions, which are so ignored in looking at public broadcasting. And that would be a good way, I think, of doing that. We were asked a specific question on the vague wording of the SABC Charter. I nearly said comrades, sorry. Members of this committee, I challenge you to identify from the Broadcasting Act what the charter of the SABC actually is. And if you look at the Broadcasting Act, Chapter 4 is headed Public Broadcasting Service and Charter of the Corporation. Section 6 is headed Charter of the Corporation. And Part 2, which starts Section 7 to 9, is headed Incorporation Objectives and Organization of the Corporation. And the objectives of the corporation seems to be what the charter is. But ask the SABC if they really, really know exactly what sections are in the charter or are not in the charter. A lot of that is very vaguely worded. And it's been difficult for the SABC, I'm not talking on their behalf, I think it's been difficult for them to really identify what their public mandate is given the problematic provisions of the Broadcasting Act. When we look at the issue of strengthening the board and the point that, sorry, Randy, I'm just blanking on your surname now, thank you, on what we do about how does Parliament pay oversight of a board when a number of the members, the executive members, Parliament doesn't have a role in. I think it's correct that Parliament doesn't have a role in appointing the executive members. That's the role of the non-executive members to appoint. It's very problematic, as Jane has very, I think, cogently put, the problems of the ministerial interference through the back door on the appointment of the non-executive members. This has been a recurring drama for the SABC in terms of the previous board, the previous group chief executive officer. This is a recurring nightmare, I think, that we really have to take steps to stop and to make it clear that it's the non-executive members of the board exclusively who appoint the board, to appoint the executive members, and therefore we have to be accountable to that and to be held accountable by this committee and through proper oversight of that appointment. When we noted within the coalition the question that the minister had said publicly that she really couldn't be involved, as the SABC was an independent body and she really couldn't get involved in the current crisis. Given the minister's really day-to-day involvement in a number of aspects of the SABC that you can see through its shareholder compact, which is another document that wasn't mentioned and that should be, I wonder how many members of this committee really have read in detail the memorandum, articles of association, and shareholder compact of the SABC to see the level of ministerial involvement actually in the SABC. We think it's unacceptable and really needs to be looked at. The last point, forgive me if I've got this wrong, but I think the last point was a question that was asked about Section 16 and the removal processes and the collapsing. What we're suggesting is the removal of the need to delete Section 17 only if our proposed amendments to Section 16 that we've provided in the coalition bill are incorporated, because that really does deal with the disqualification and conflicts of interest altogether. On the question of the interim board, I think, I hope I can say this, I mean, this was a very difficult and vexed issue for the coalition, and it's part of the reason why we reached agreement on terms of our proposed bill later, you know, after the submission of written submissions. And I have to say there were a number of people, myself included initially, that thought that the very concept of an interim board was problematic. To be perfectly honest, I think we still actually feel that at a gut sense. But we recognise that in the extraordinary circumstance where Parliament really fires all together at once each and every board member for cause, for the grounds put in here, and not spuriously because like we're getting rid of the whole board, going through each and every board member and seeing whether or not they have fulfilled their public mandate. In those extraordinary circumstances, you simply get, the SABC wouldn't go on, you know, there's a danger, it just wouldn't go on air. We recognize that would be a crisis. In that extreme crisis, and we recognize that the president, you know, you can't get away from Parliament. You are the elected officials. Parliament is central to a democracy. At the same time, the president of the country is the president of the country. We recognize an executive role in that. What we are very unhappy with is the complete open discretion that the executive, the executive in the form of the president has in the committee's current bill to appoint exactly whom he or she, whoever the president is at the time, wants to appoint, with no experience required, qualifications required, expertise required. That simply can't be right. It can't be in the public interest to do that. And we also recognise that actually there needs to be strict limits on that. No more than 3 months. Cannot change editorial policies. That's got to be done through a proper publicly nominated public process board and not over an election. And someone said, well, how do you do that? What happens if there's a crisis over an election? Tough. You cannot have a hand-picked presidential interim board during an election period. You will simply devastate the public perception of the independence of the public broadcaster over that, and I think you will call into question the legitimacy of an election itself if you do not have a board of the SABC in place over an election, given the importance of the SABC in being a number of people's primary source of news and information. We urge the committee very seriously to consider having an exclusion of that kind for an election period. And remember, an election period, some people are already thinking we're in an election period. We're not. An election period is a legal concept about when one is in an election period. That is the period we are talking about. I hope that clarifies.
Chairperson, just that last point. You know, the board, and I understand the board and why we need to get the independent board, but are we not taking a risk trying to equate the work of good quality, high integrity people doing the public broadcaster work, you know, middle and lower management that actually walks the beat? And because you have a questionable board and an executive management, you have a questionable, I put in inverted commas, you equate that with the quality of work that is being done. Isn't that two separate ones? Or when they are being found guilty by terms of association, those people will also be guilty of taking sides. Is that what you are saying?
I think that one of the great tragedies of the current crisis, and I think I differ with Smuts, I think we are absolutely in a crisis with the SABC, is exactly the devastation on morale and working ability of mid-management people and of staff at the SABC, who are constantly worried and unsure about the maelstrom that is playing out over their heads. But the fact of the matter is, in any large-scale corporation, you know, the saying is a fish rots from its head. And similarly, the strength of an organization lies in the quality of its leadership. And Parliament has to take responsibility for the quality of the leadership on the board and must do something, I think, to ensure the integrity of that. with very poor leadership, you simply are not going to have a strong SABC, in our view. Chair, can the other members of the coalition actually respond to a number of the questions? Yeah, thanks.
I just want to respond specifically to this question, but also pick on one or two other points that have been made by different members. Mr. Peters, I think your question of where were you and your implicit criticism, I think, about the fact that our coalition is rather belated, I think your implicit criticism is absolutely correct. I think we've come together out of a recognition of the fact that we can be a lot stronger as civil society organisations if we act together. I think we take full responsibility for the fact that it's taken a long time, perhaps too long, to do that, which may also indirectly have been a contributor to the crisis. But we are committed to getting our house in order now. I don't think you can deny, however, that all of those separate and discrete organisations have been actively involved on a range of levels in relation to what's going on at the SABC. But we have hopefully develop some level of maturity to be able to realise that we're stronger together rather than acting apart. Now, Mr. Kulwani made a point that was embedded in a question about the need for interaction on an ongoing basis between stakeholders and the portfolio committee. And this is a point that I'd really like to emphasise. Something that we think is extremely important, and we would welcome an opportunity to actually have greater interaction with the portfolio committee, and for that interaction not just simply be to be restricted to times when you're considering bills. So for instance, earlier on you had a hearing on the SABC's progress in implementing the findings of the Sisulu Commission of Inquiry. Now, I'm sure, you know, everyone is aware of the complaint that we have at ICASA at the moment. We would have loved an opportunity to brief the Portfolio Committee on that particular complaint and draw to your attention the fact that the SABC's response to our complaint has been contradictory. In that hearing that took place, they said to you that they were in the process of implementing the findings, and the group chief executive officer said that the SABC had admitted that there had been wrongdoing on Snooki's Ikhalala's part, that you may have differences of opinion about the level of sanction, but the fact that there was wrongdoing on his part was indisputable. And yet in response to our complaint to ICASA, they went to ICASA and argued that there was no wrongdoing on Snooki's Ikhalala's part and fully justified his actions that were the subject of the Sisulu Commission of Inquiry. Now, if that isn't a contradiction, I don't know what is. And we would really like an opportunity to interact with the Portfolio Committee in order to prevail on the Portfolio Committee to pose the necessary questions, not only to the SABC, but also to ICASA as well. ICASA, frankly, is sleeping on the job. We don't hear ICASA's voice in relation to what's going on at the SABC at the moment. The only reason why we submitted a complaint to ICASA alleging violations of license conditions in the Broadcasting Act flowing from the Sisulu Commission was because ICASA failed to investigate the matter. And I know that the matter did come up last year in the Portfolio Committee. Should ICASA not be using its powers to investigate? And ICASA does have those powers. And the Constitutional Court has made it perfectly clear once again that a fundamental feature of regulatory power is the power to interrogate and investigate. And I really do believe that ICASA is letting us down. It's letting us down in relation to being proactive about the crisis that's unfolding at the SABC. And because of that, it's also contributed to the crisis too. Now, I think it was Mr. Kumalo, if I'm not mistaken, who raised the point about the vague wording in the SABC Charter. I think the issue that we've got with the SABC Charter is that it doesn't specify in detail what a South African mandate
for the SABC should be. 10 of the 16 clauses of the SABC Charter are cut and pasted from the BBC Charter. Now, I'm sorry, I think that is lazy legislation making. Oh. I'm horrified. I think there are particular historical reasons why that is the case, but the fact of the matter is that we do not have a proper SABC charter that recognises the will and aspirations of South Africans for its public broadcaster, and that must change. I think there was also a point made by Khutu Kumalo, if I'm not mistaken. I don't want to address that. Just maybe to go on to Ms. Smuts's particular point. We have every intention of approaching a court in order to get a declarator on the Articles of Association, but we've recognized that it's procedural for us to go through to certain steps. And the steps have been, number one, we met with the SABC in order to present the contents of our legal opinions. Step number two is we wrote to the minister and sent copies of the legal opinions to her. We've since updated the legal opinions to take into account the revisions of the Articles of Association. We've found that, in fact, in certain respects, the revised versions of the Articles of Association are worse than the 2003 version. And we wanted to take those steps in order to give the minister an opportunity to look into the matter and to correct the deficits in the Articles of Association. If that isn't done, then...
Yes, thank you. If I can just elaborate on what Ms. Duncan has just said, I think it's also important, as Justine indicated earlier, you can't look at this in isolation. The articles must obviously comply with an act which sufficiently, comprehensively, and most importantly, constitutionally regulates the SABC. So it takes time, but that is the problem.
I'll keep it brief and just reply to the questions that haven't been answered already. As everybody said, we really would welcome, as the IPO, an opportunity to interact with the Portfolio Committee more than just at hearings. In response to Smuts's question, what was the outcome of our last presentation? The IPO, the SABC, and the TPA, which is the Producers Alliance, have agreed to a process where we're investigating international terms of trade. In fact, the team is doing that investigation. And we expect to have a result by the end of October of that investigation. So that is... Yeah, something's happening. Something's definitely happening. And it's very exciting to us because we're investigating international best practice, which we're hoping the SABC will then implement. And the last comment I just want to make with regard to the crisis is that I want to reiterate, we have day-to-day dealings with middle management at the SABC, and morale could not possibly be lower. Some of the jokes that are going around are hysterically funny and incredibly sad at the same time. And the organization is completely in a state of paralysis, functionally. And that crisis, as I mentioned in my presentation, we're going to see it on our TV screens in 9 months. You're going to see the impact of what's happening today through repeats of very old programming. Yeah.
I would like to address...
Yeah.
If I may, it's just briefly to on the issue of the sports broadcasting rights. I think it is unfair, I have to say, to blame that on the group chief executive officer, because I know from personal experience that the loss of sports rights, the SABC warned the CASA about its regulations and the need to specifically ensure the public broadcaster's access to that, and we came and warned the committee about that. So there are regulatory issues, I think, at stake here, and that's exactly what happens unless Parliament and ICASA and other institutions work together. Limco's laughing at me, but unless Parliament, ICASA and other institutions work together specifically to protect in all aspects the public broadcaster. We don't hold a brief for them, but we thought that that was unfair, and also indicates the critical role of day-to-day oversight and involvement by this committee and ICASA as well in ensuring that the SABC works effectively and is able to fulfill a public mandate.
It must be quite clear to the general public and everybody that you are protected. Do not be intimidated, especially by the opposition party. The majority party here is
very protected. Now, I've just got one small question before we break for lunch. Justine, just one small question. You see, early on, Professor Berger said that let's assume that this bill is passed and proceedings are instituted against a member, for example, or members of the board, in terms of the 15-1, after a due process in Parliament, inquiry is held and a resolution is adopted, and the President has removed a person. What he said is that could be contested by that member in law. Is that correct? Is Parliament's decision and the President's decision not final and solemn, or is it challengeable in court? I just want to get a clarity from you from a legal point of view.
In my experience, it depends how that decision is taken. If Parliament takes a decision that's clearly not for cause, that is clearly political, quote-unquote, it absolutely would be challengeable. And I have to say, Parliament is not sovereign. We're a constitutional democracy, so Parliament is subject to that. So no, the President's conduct and Parliament's conduct in going through that is, you know, would absolutely is something that could be challenged in a court of law if it was done not in accordance with legislation and with due process principles. And that's why I think we're imagining the process of removing the entire board for cause would be such an extraordinary event. And it's also why, even if one or more of the members of the board are removed, unless you fix the appointment processes and the qualification problems existing in the current Broadcasting Act, which can be done in a short-term way, we believe, through proper additions to your own bill, you'll perpetuate the crisis in the next board, we think.
Yes,
if we can have one more response from Melissa. Ms. Mutt, you raised a crucial point just now regarding the presidential appointment of the interim board and in extraordinary circumstances of the board as a whole being removed or for the replacement of specific members that are removed. In this regard, if you have a look at the current amendment, it is placed in the hands of the president, that authority. But what we say is from the SX side, is that if the minister or the president has that power to appoint an interim board or board members, that should be a non-discretionary power, merely a formality. And maybe what we could do is to add a section in the actual bill that says, shall on the advice of Parliament. I think that may...
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. I think we've had a very productive morning. It's hot in here. We're going to turn down this heater. We're going to adjourn now. It's 1:10. Can we come back at 2:00? And we'll then take Mr. Sidole. Is the person from the FW de Klerk Foundation here? Not yet. And SACB? Thank you. not yet. All right, then we will reconvene at 2 o'clock and we'll get Mr. Kitoli to present his interview then.
Yeah, I need to go get the name.